using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, the 13th of July, year of our Lord, 2021, day 486 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look, of course, at the moves towards more vaccine mandates that are being done both in the United States and elsewhere. Because this is a global agenda, we can tell what is coming here by looking at the other countries like France. We have new admissions about vaccine issues. Joining us today will be Joel Hirshhorn, and he will be talking about the next step in the push to make us take vaccines, and that is the rubber stamping by the FDA. Of approval. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, and we're going to begin today by taking a look at what is happening in South Africa. Why? Because what is happening in South Africa is Marxism. And this has been rolling in a very long time into South Africa. Ostensibly, the immediate cause of what is happening in the last couple of days, and the death count has gone up from last morning when it was about 6 people and a couple of hundred people arrested. Later in the day, it was 10 people who had died. Now it is up to, as of this morning, 30 people have died, and 800 have been arrested. Why? Well, what you have happening there is the former president, who had been there for a very long time, part of the African National Congress, Zuma, Jacob Zuma. He was replaced by someone else in the same party, because I don't think you're going to get anything other than the Marxists once the Marxists are in power. And so what we're seeing here ultimately is a Stalin versus Trotsky version in South Africa. One group of Marxists going after the other. And he is on trial for corruption charges. As a matter of fact, at first he would not show up. They found him in contempt for not showing up. Sentenced him to jail for the contempt as well as these other charges. It was about corruption over weapons charges, ostensibly. But understand, the guy who took his place is now a multi-billionaire. How does that happen? Well, you know, how does that happen with Obama or with any, or the Clintons or any of these people? And when you look at the reaction of the various people, the riots there. There we have now a lot of footage that has come out of riots.
You know something, guys? I'm inside the Watercrest Mall. Absolute chaos. Unbelievable. I can't believe I'm witnessing something like this. What a shame. Beautiful country. Absolutely.
One communist corrupt thief coming after another.
Look at the fucking pandemonium.
There is absolutely criminality on an extreme scale. Because you know, when you have a political crisis,
Watercrest Mall is absolutely destroyed.
Crisis, aren't they? that they have decided that they will do some retail therapy, also known as looting. But it makes them feel better. Yeah, ostensibly, this is a corruption charge related to a 1999 arms deal where he reportedly received bribes from a French arms manufacturer. But, of course, he has already also been charged of rape, and he beat that rape of one of his close political allies' daughter. You have the riots intensifying across the country. Here's some more pictures of what is happening there. Massive riots in the streets. A mall in Pietermaritzburg was set on fire while rioters looted and torched stores in Johannesburg and Durban. We have more footage here. If you look at this, this is, we got a still there. It's coming up. Okay. We've got a lot of technical issues this morning. Let me just say, we've had been scrambling because Restream is down. So we're only getting the broadcast video live on Twitter and on DLive. This is the first time we've had a problem with Restream. So it's not on Trovo this morning. But we are on aftermath.fm in terms of audio. So you can tune in there live as well. As officers retreated, the crowds reappeared with individuals disappearing into shops to pick the shelves clean, writes Sky News. They said the protests turned into something unpredictable and destructive. Well, no, actually, we typically see this type of reaction based on any kind of presumed justification. Television news channels broadcast live footage of people breaking into electronic shops, filling their arms with flat-screen TVs. You know, things like this. Here's another. This is typical of the kind of footage, as you see. Look at this. They are so distraught about one of the Marxist leaders arresting another Marxist leader that they're just going in and, just walking out with whatever they can steal. They're not even running. They're just walking until somebody starts shooting rubber bullets at them. Total devastation of the economy there, the retail economy. As one person pointed out, they put up a picture of the prison, and they said, this is where Zuma is, not at those malls you're looting, so go get him and stop behaving like hooligans. Well, actually, it has nothing at all to do with Zuma. It's just, again, an excuse. So they're burning malls, looting stores everywhere, and it's not just in South Africa. In Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, they are very upset about this as well. They're so upset about Zuma that they're doing rioting and looting and retail therapy in sympathy in Zimbabwe as well. South African Consumer Goods Council warned that the unrest may lead to food shortages as deliveries have been disrupted. Sky News reported in Alexandria, we saw a man lying motionless on the pavement outside the bank branch with residents stepping over his body in an effort to avoid the police. And the New York Times, they put up that footage that I just showed you, with this comment. Some analysts and activists said the uprising was born of deeper issues of poverty and a lack of opportunity. Yeah, as one person commented, that's always the way this has been rationalized, isn't it? Mostly peaceful looting, mostly peaceful retail therapy. It's born of a poverty in a culture, a poverty of morality, and that flows from the top. Oh, by the way, the current Marxist leader who had the other previous Marxist leader arrested, Cyril Ramaphosa, said, our vaccination program has been severely disrupted. That's the most important thing, the vaccination program. No matter what happens, that's the key issue. And the South African military has now been deployed to help with these riots. But let me tell you, this is what it's going to look like when it comes to your town as well. And this is no military, no police in sight. And look at the people who are defending themselves. You got about 7 or 8 people there. With guns blocking the road, and look at that, hundreds of people coming down the road, some of them getting behind shields, and they're throwing rocks at these guys who were hurling bullets at them. Pretty amazing footage, frankly. But where does this all begin?
Okay, let's go.
Well, we'll keep this footage rolling here so you can see. Now they're advancing on these guys. This all begins with the government being looters, the government being robbers, thieves. And that's what the ANC has been from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, I talked to, this has been an ongoing issue. I've talked to Simon Roche, who is a part of a self-defense organization there of white farmers, because they have a higher rate of murder against white farmers than in any other place in the world, any other group or demographic. As a matter of fact, South Africa itself has become a very dangerous place, and they have a very high national murder rate as it is. But when it comes to the white farmers who are isolated and get attacked periodically, horrendous things being done, people being hacked to death by machetes, babies being put into ovens and burned alive, that type of thing, you know, because the white skin. And so that is all fed by the ANC. And Simon Roche had been a member of the ANC when they were fighting apartheid. He's a Christian. He didn't want to see the racism that was a part of apartheid. But then after these people got into power, he realized that they were not anti-racist. They were pro-Marxists, which is what is happening in this country. I talked to him years ago, and he said, this is coming to your country pretty soon. You just don't realize it yet in America. And he's true, and we can see the beginnings of this in Black Lives Matter in terms of Antifa and in terms of the justification given by the government for looting. As a New American points out, proposed land expropriation, let's just call that theft, right? When the government does it, it's called expropriation. It's called eminent domain or whatever. They don't even make the claim of eminent domain. They just say, well, it's ours. It would ruin the South African economy. By the way, it's not just the white farmers. It's also the Zulus who are not happy with the ANC, the Marxists either. So they have a tentative alliance there as well. In 2014, writes the New American, the Institute of Race Relations in South Africa warned that the ruling African National Congress, the Marxists, the ANC, would seek to nationalize all the country's land without compensation. Without compensation, nationalizing it. I mean, just classical Marxism, communism, which I think perhaps we ought to start calling the DNC the ANC, right? It's a better fit for what they are. The ANC would do so by taking, quote, custodianship of the land, claiming that no expropriation had occurred. In other words, we're just going to take control of it. Like, we're not going to necessarily put it in our name, you know, because there isn't any property, so why register anything? The warning seemed to literally echo throughout South Africa back in 2014, as the ANC employed that very tactic to take hold of the country's mineral resources without compensation. So would they take the farmland without compensation? Well, they'd already done it with the minerals. Two-thirds of the resources had been privately owned, mineral resources. Yet, by means of an act of 2002 called the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. What are they developing? Oh, that's right. That's how these Marxist leaders like Zuma and Ramaphosa become so fabulously wealthy, right? Very much like Venezuela, where you see the kids of these people running that kleptocracy there, that communism. You see them on Instagram and other places jetting around before COVID, jetting around and doing pictures of their elaborate lifestyle in Europe and elsewhere. Custodianship of the ANC was used to take control of the minerals, which meant that the government wasn't liable for billions in compensation. As a result, the latest collaboration between the ANC and the Economic Freedom Fighters, that's what they call themselves, comes as no surprise to the politically minded South Africans. Isn't that interesting? You know, they talk about the Equality Act, the ANC here in America, also known as the DNC. They talk about the Equality Act. These people call it the Economic Freedom Fighters, who are stealing property. It was inevitable that they would agree to a commitment to state custodianship over all land. And there's several things in the article here from New American that they point out, but this is the key statement here. The state must take responsible legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions to enable state custodianship for citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. Equity, right? What the communists promise you is not equal opportunity. They promise you equity and poverty. where they take everything that you have. And let's see, how was that put by the Davos globalist technocrat crowd? Oh, that's right, you own nothing. And you'll be happier. Because there'll be a small clique of elitists who run your communist global communism. And they will own everything. What's to stop the ANC from extending this to pools of private capital, they ask? Well, nothing, right? First they did it with the minerals. And a lot of people didn't defend it because they weren't miners. Then they did it to the farmers. A lot of people didn't defend that because there weren't a lot of farmers raising the food. What are they going to do when they get rid of the farmers who know how to raise the food? You think that the African Marxist thieves know how to run, how to grow food? Zuma and Ramaphosa don't know anything about this, and it's exactly what is happening everywhere else. When you look at the political leaders who are taking things over and saying, you know, we are essential, but you are not essential. The farmers aren't essential. The miners aren't essential. So they said the ANC would be legally permitted to take custodianship of all private medical savings, for example, from the National Health Insurance Fund. They could also sweep all the money out of savings and investments, everything. And they will. They will. That is exactly what these people do. But, of course, you'll be happier when that is no longer the case, which is why I find it interesting, you know, what is happening in Cuba. The pictures there of the violence that has happened. I don't know if you've seen the picture, the bloody picture of the Associated Press reporter. I mean, he was the thugs that they unleashed on people in Cuba. Absolutely amazing. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets. And they've lived under communism for a very long time. But the point I was making yesterday, and I haven't seen anybody else make this point, you know, they've had some protests. They've been very rare, very far between, and not that many people. But they had tens of thousands of Cubans taking to the street in some of the cities. And this has been precipitated because of the lockdown. And the lockdown is nothing other than Marxism. What the globalists are pushing, what the UN is pushing, what Davos and Bill Gates and Trump and Biden are pushing is nothing other than Marxism. The idea that you're going to be locked down, that they'll give you a universal basic income, that your job and your business are not essential. All of that is a hallmark of Marxism. You know, they know better than you. They will take care of you. It's a paternalism that they tell you. These people who pretend to be philanthropists, these people who pretend to have an agenda of paternalism to help you, to keep you safe, it's anything other than that. But in Cuba, they have lived under this for over 60 years. And what has really galvanized the people are these lockdown measures. And it's galvanized people in the UK as well. I don't understand why, well, I do understand why this is not happening in America. In a single word. Trump. The people who should be angry about this, the people who should be protesting about this, are gaslighted about Trump's election. But let's count the votes in Arizona, right? We don't care about what happens in our lives because it's all really, it's not about Trump doing a lockdown or Trump doing the global vaccine. Think about that. The vaccines that are being rolled out everywhere, the four vaccines that are out there everywhere, those are all funded and rushed through as part of Operation Warp Speed. Even AstraZeneca. AstraZeneca, we bought 100 million doses of that. We paid billions of dollars for that as well, even though we're not using it here. It's been judged to be dangerous, or maybe they didn't pay off the right politicians to get their product out there on the street. And it is dangerous. It is a dangerous vaccine. But they all are dangerous. But now we're going to take AstraZeneca, which the government is telling us is not safe enough for Americans, and we're going to push that out to other people in other countries. All of this worldwide vaccine toxic injection program, that is all coming from America, and it all came from the Trump administration. Think about that. The guy who was not a globalist produced a global vaccine, four different versions of the mRNA stuff, and funded it. and made multi-billionaires out of these people as well, by the way. So when we look at this, and we look at the lockdown that was a precursor to this, this was the thing that triggered the Cubans to take to the streets. And they're chanting freedom, food. They're upset about inflation. Do you think that's going to be a problem here as well? Yeah, when we get hyperinflation, will we see people upset about that, taking to the streets, or will they just put on their red MAGA cap and say, if only Trump were president, this would all go away. Let's get Trump back in the White House by hook or by crook. In the UK, they're not under that delusion. So you had, by conservative estimates, 500,000 people. Boris Johnson retreated. Why? Because of that crowd. He's out there warning everybody, hey, you're all going to die, but, you know, I'm not going to keep you in lockdown anymore, because he knows these people, that's a mass of people that they cannot control. And so they're going to back off and try to control them in other ways. In Cuba, same thing is happening. You know, they've been cowed into submission for decades by these communists. But when the communists go to lockdown, they've had enough. But not in America. Because the only problem is we don't have Trump. That's our only problem in this country. That was the problem I had. The first problem I had was Stop the Steal before it became an obvious lie and an obvious theft of the Trump supporters, abusing their trust. That was the big problem I had with it. It's like, well, you're not going to push back against this vaccine agenda? Let's take a quick look before we get into what is happening with lockdown. In terms of transportation, because that is also part of this Marxist globalist agenda, to make sure that you go nowhere. And how are they doing that? Well, they've got a lot of different ways to do that. They can say that it's not safe for you to travel unless you get masked and vaccinated with mandatory vaccines and all these other things. Or they can just cut the legs off your transportation and make sure that you don't have any fuel. They're working on that end of it as well. That is the long-term plan that has been in place for a very long time. And let's look at this from the standpoint of the power grid. It doesn't matter whether it is Tesla. Now that this thing is ramping up, and they're going to have massive subsidies, billions of dollars now, given they're re-upping the subsidies. That's been the business model of Elon Musk at Tesla, to make sure that Ford and GM and these other companies who are selling internal combustion engines, that their customers have an added tax that is then used to subsidize the electric cars that Tesla is using. But now they've wised up, and the people at GM and at Ford and all of these other auto manufacturers, Volkswagen, all the rest of them, they're jumping on the battery electric car as well to get the subsidies, and there's a new round of subsidies that are happening. There is a new infrastructure bill that is going to put all kinds of electric chargers everywhere to try to make it usable. But the big issue, and this is not the first time this has been considered, I've seen previous issues about this, people in Europe, as they're banning internal combustion engines left and right. It's a city here and a city there, and then you have an entire country, whether it's the UK or Germany, saying that by such and such a date, and they keep moving it closer and closer to 2030. Some of them have already gotten to 2030. You know, first it would be 2050. 2045. Do I hear 2040? Do I hear 2035? 2030. Sold. 2030. That is the agenda. No cars at that point, except for their electric cars. And everything else banned. What is going to happen to the grid? You know, we're looking at rolling blackouts in Texas because of the renewable energy grid. We're looking at problems, big problems in California yet again, because of electric grid. How are we going to put all the cars that everybody drives being electric, how is that going to work out for us? Well, of course it isn't. Now, you could say that this is just bad planning and stupidity, but it's actually what they plan. You know, it's like the schools. I've said for the longest time that when people would ask, why can't Johnny read? Well, they don't care about Johnny reading. It's not about reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's about leading them into transgenderism. It's about the rainbow monkey in the UK. You've seen the pictures of that. I'm not even going to talk about that. That's so disgusting. So disgusting with that rainbow monkey thing. To teach reading to kids? No, they're not teaching reading. They're not teaching writing. They're teaching, this guy is writhing in front of them with sexually explicit props. It was disgusting what is happening. But that's the agenda. The agenda is not to give kids the tools of learning. It's not to help them to get an education. No. There's a different agenda. And it's a different agenda for this. This is not about saving the environment. This is about making sure that you don't travel, because they're going to make sure it's busted. For example, you have a New York hydroelectric power plant, the oldest renewable energy facility in the world that's still running. Now, before we get into the transportation, this plant decided, or realized, that they could make more money doing Bitcoin mining. So this is a hydroelectric plant. It just runs off of water and gravity. And they can make three times the amount of money doing Bitcoin mining that they can if they generate electricity and they sell it into the grid. But let's talk about the grid. There's an article from Real Clear Energy. It talks about the electric car. And the guy says, I'm a big fan of everything electric. He's Robert Bryce. He says, I'm pro-electricity. Over the past 16 months, I've published a book, A Question of Power, Electricity and the Wealth of Nations. And that's true. It's not electricity, though, is the end product. But cheap, available energy, let's just put it that way, however it's generated, the fact that you would have cheap, available energy not only gives you a better quality of life, but it's actually been shown to extend the quantity of life. The life expectancy goes up in a nation. You don't just have a better standard of living. You actually live longer. But he goes back and he talks about the hype over electric vehicles and what is going to happen to our shaky and fragile grid that can easily be hijacked. And it'll become an even bigger target if everything, including our transportation, runs off of that grid. And he goes back a little over a century ago. He said, 1901, the LA Times declared, 1901, the electric automobile will quickly and easily take precedence over all others. If the claims with which Mr. Edison has for his new battery are not overstated, there's not much doubt that it will make a fortune for somebody. 10 years later, the New York Times declared the EV, quote, has long been recognized as the ideal solution because it is cleaner and quieter and much more economical. And yet, today, even with all the subsidies, it only accounts for 2% of new car sales. Even in California, where they give buyers $7,000 in rebates, it's still only 6% of the cars in California. And yet, California is also an example of what the problem is here. The California Energy Commission says that the state will need 1.3 million new public EV chargers in 2030. See, this is the problem. Once the government starts making mandates, once the government decides this business is essential, that business is not essential, this type of car is essential and will be subsidized, but you, if you decide to have a different type of car, you'll be shut down. It's just that simple. Whenever the government starts making those kinds of decisions, we ought to start looking to see what their true agenda is. And, of course, the first thing is going to be they're going to be funneling money to their friends, crony capitalism. It's also called corruption, which is what we just saw in South Africa, okay? It's that type of Marxist, big government, centralized control breeds corruption. That's why the founders of this country feared what they called consolidation more than anything else. That's why they created a federal government that was divided into three parts to push against each other, not to align itself in a hierarchy under the judicial system, but three co-equal branches to push against each other, and then divided power between the federal government, the states, and the people, retaining most, and when the states created the federal government, they and the people retained most of their power. They delegated very little, and they made that clear in the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. So this guy says, so yes, I am pro-electricity, but I adamantly am opposed to the notion that we should electrify everything, including transportation. The big problem with EVs are affordability, resilience, and supply chains. And so if you understand what is happening with this, and the fact is that electric cars have always been a big part of this technocratic agenda. I don't have a particular axe to grind with electric cars. I don't care what people drive. I like golf carts. I'm not being condescending. I mean, I literally like golf carts. I did not like the game of golf, but I used to go golfing with my friends so I could drive the golf cart. And we had some interesting experiences when I was driving the golf cart, which I will not go into right now. But suffice to say, we did some severe damage to our golf clubs and to their golf clubs and to, in one case, to the cart itself that we had to take care of. So my golf cart days are over. But it was kind of nice driving a golf cart out in the beautiful open pastures. That's the best part of the game of golf, in my opinion. But I did like electric cars. They were nice. They were fast and silent. And yet, the agenda for all of this, I think, has been to deliberately break and to control transportation, as we've seen this last year. The agenda in terms of supply lines and determining that one business is essential and another one is not, you've seen how that's worked out the last year. It is designed to break us. It is designed to control us, to track us. And that's been my problem from the very beginning. And again, when you have one industry being heavily subsidized and others being punished, that ought to make every American who believes in freedom and liberty choke. Who are they to make these decisions? Who is Trump to determine what is to be shut down and what isn't, or Fauci, or any of these people? And the same thing goes of the cars. But they're kettling us, if you will. They're kettling us into an unsustainable situation in the name of sustainability. They say, well, we have to have everything, you know, we got to generate our power off of renewable resources, and yet the renewable resources are not reliable, as we saw here in Texas. And we have to have everybody using the same type of vehicle, and that's got to be funneled, that's got to be run off of our electric grid, which is also going to be mandated to be getting its power from renewable sources. Do you see how they are setting us up for disaster? Blackouts are almost certain this summer, and electricity prices in California are absolutely exploding. Last year in California, electric prices soared by 7.5%, and California regulators expect the rates to surge another 40% or so by 2030. What's going to happen with all the additional demand? So they're not planning on you driving your electric cars. But of course, you know, the other aspect of this is to make sure that if you've got to charge it up off of the grid, that you have to have a box that's going to track how much you're driving so they can tax you by mile and then apply that to everybody. But, you know, we have to do that because you could fuel up anywhere, essentially. And unlike if it was a hydrogen electric car or if it's a gasoline or diesel car, they can get you at the pump. But now they say, well, we got to tax you by the mile, so we need to track everybody. Everybody get that black box put in. Electrifying transportation will put more of our energy eggs into one basket, and it will make our grid an even juicier target for terrorists, for cyber thieves, or for bad actors. Yeah, you want to see how ransomware goes after the grid when everything is there? Transportation? I mean, we shut down transportation. You're going to be shutting down food as well. Because most all of our food has the heaviest component in it is the transportation aspect of it. It'll reduce resilience and reliability in case of a prolonged grid failure due to natural disaster, equipment failure, human error, or criminal activity. EVs will also make the U.S. more dependent on China. Think about that. How is that? Well, because it will require... If we have even just half of our fleet becomes electric vehicles, it'll mean that we need 9 times the current production of cobalt. We'll need 3 times the current global production of lithium and about 2 times the amount of copper. Now, other than copper, the lithium and the cobalt are heavily controlled by China. That's what they've been working on long-term strategy with their Belt and Road Initiative. So these rare earth elements that are needed to make electric vehicles are going to be held hostage to the natural resources that China has control of. So it will make China much more powerful, much richer. So he points out, he says, the simple truth is that oil's century-long dominance of the transportation fuel market is largely due to its high energy density. And that density, along with oil's versatility, its quick refueling, its ease of handling, its continuing improvements in terms of internal combustion engines and hybrids. Hybrids, by the way, will be outlawed as well. Banned. They already have a time frame to ban the hybrids. First, they banned the diesels. Now, you didn't come for them. You didn't defend that because you didn't have a diesel. Then they came for the gasoline engines, and then they came for the hybrids. And there was nothing left, and we couldn't drive anything because the grid was down. It assures that oil will be fueling our cars, our trucks, our ships, our boats, our snowmobiles, our ATVs, our bulldozers, our excavators, and our airplanes for decades to come. Well, you know, it's interesting when he talks about this, because one of the things that we need to understand when we talk about energy is that electricity is a product, right? It is not a source of power. It is a product, and that's one of the things that he does not mention here. It is a product of it, and so it has to be generated somehow. And a good example of this is a picture that somebody sent to me of a – this is – look at this picture. This is an electric charger with a big diesel generator behind it. I mean, this is so think about that. That diesel generator is very, 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 very dirty and noisy compared to a power plant that runs coal. And this picture right here, I think that's a VW that's parked there to charge up. This is the perfect icon for the foolishness of what this is all really about. The vast majority of the grid is going to continue to be run by coal and by natural gas and even by nuclear, because that's how you generate the power. And when you have renewables in, you have to cycle the coal and the natural gas and these other things, which, you know, it's just a matter of expense and engineering to make them clean. That can be done. And so then it becomes a question of, should we let the market make this decision, or should it be mandated by fiat by our politicians? We'll have to let the politicians do it by mandate. But that picture of that diesel generator, if you remember, and we just had a Tesla Plaid. They just started making these things and selling them, and one of them caught fire while the guy was in it. He escaped. But the pictures of that thing burning down, I had Vince Agnelli send it to me last week, and I think Drudge picked it up as well. It's pretty amazing, the fire that was involved with that Tesla Plaid. But when a Porsche came out with theirs and they started running their electric car around the Nürburgring in Germany, Elon Musk was upset about that. So he wanted to show that he still had the fastest car. So they put a non-production Plaid car that had some additional components to it out there, and they were going to show the Germans what a real EV was about, except that to charge it, he brought over a diesel generator, just like you saw in this picture, just like this picture. So he had a charger there with a diesel generator, and the people around there were very upset. They said, this thing is unbelievably noisy and smoky, and he's using this thing to power his car. And so they're going to put diesel generators, which don't have any of the controls that you would have at a power plant, to run these charging stations. It's absolutely insane. But when we come back, we're going to take a look at the insanity surrounding the lockdown on day 486, as well as the big pharmaceutical vaccines. Stay with us. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, and this is from a listener, Noel, and a supporter of the program. He said, here's a story and an option that you might want to share with the audience about college. He said, the superintendent of my building has an 18-year-old son, let's call him Jake, who was accepted to Queens College and begins attendance this coming September. His hardworking immigrant parents are very proud of Jake, as he would be the first in the family to attend college. This milestone has been darkened, however, by the fact that Queens College has mandated that all students be vaccinated in order to attend. Jake's college-bound vaccinated friends aren't helping with the agonizing decision ahead, and you can see that Jake is not vaccinated. While feeding the family vaccine report after vaccine report of deadly, life-altering consequences already sustained, I've urged them to never take the vaccine. Among other options, I forwarded to them Solari.com's attestation form for universities. He says, based on your excellent interview with Catherine Austin Fitz, and it was Catherine has put this thing together, and you can find these things at Solari. And I cannot recommend that highly enough. I penned what she had to say to the top of my social media feeds, and so I hope people go there and look at the parental forms and also the forms to help you to push back against these school, university, and employer mandates. They've done a lot of work. They're making that available for free. And, of course, you can alter it if you wish, but they have great advice on how to stand up for your rights there. But he said, based on that, he said, as you might imagine, actually serving the forms is intimidating for these first-generation immigrants who also worry that Queens College just may revoke the acceptance. So he says, what to do? He said, the next idea that I offered them seem to be more palatable to them and may appeal to your audience as well. So if you're worried about getting confrontational with them because you have decided that, and a lot of people, as we see with the K through 12 schools that people are paying $30,000, $50,000 to, the parents who spend that kind of money are typically people who have gone to name schools and they've got a very high paying job and they want to see the same type of thing for their child. They have made this the credentials that the kids are going to get by going to a name school, an elitist school, whether it's K through 12 or college. They have made that one of their key goals in life. And as a result, they have enshrined that in a way that it controls them, if you think about it. It becomes a controlling idol. And that's one of the things that I would suggest to people. Is don't create those kinds of idols in your life that control you. Think outside the box. Think about the value of your child's life being something other than the amount of money that they make per year, first of all. But secondly, if you still are oriented towards getting into that name brand school, and whatever it costs the parents, and now, whatever it costs the child in terms of health to have to take the vaccine, if that is still your goal, here's a suggestion from Noel. He says, I'm suggesting that Jake delay his start until at least January of 2022, the spring semester, and to see what develops after millions of families collectively stare down the same gun. In the meantime, he can take free online courses from top-flight universities offered through Coursera.com and edX.org. The first one is spelled C-O-U-R-S-E-R-A, Coursera.com, and the other one is edX.org. You can take calculus, physics, and other non-woke subjects. You can earn certification to place on your emerging LinkedIn profile. And besides preparing him for those courses when he goes to Queens College, this workaround has the added benefit of helping him to hone his skills and focusing. And it helps him to take control of his own life and of his own education. He said, my hope is that a national backlash will emerge, though hopefully not through a tragedy, to shame these tyrannical requirements out of existence. Only time will tell. But time is what this workaround offers. Students facing this dilemma should all take the coming semester off. Wouldn't that be interesting? Because that would be a way to, if people did that individually, I think that's great advice. And then collectively, if a lot of people said, well, we're just going to take the semester off, the universities might look at this and say, ooh, they're not coming anymore. I wonder if we need to relax this. So it'd be a kind of a boycott, in a sense, that might wake them up. This is from a naval officer. This is on Twitter. He said in his hashtag, in case you want to see the entire long series of posts, Twitter address is why wherever. He says, I'm a naval officer who spent the last 15 years on active duty. I'm now potentially facing forcible discharge if I won't submit to taking the COVID vaccine. Here's a thread on just what a scandal that is. He said, last week the Army released an EXORD, an executive order, telling its troops to prepare for mandatory vaccination in September. Though he has the authority, it's not likely that the president will mandate vaccination without full FDA approval. So let's look out for that development. And by the way, that is why Joel Hirshhorn is joining us in about 10 minutes to talk about that push to get full FDA approval, because that is going to remove a lot of legal and liability options for people. It's going to be a big move towards making these mandatory. So we're going to be talking to Joel Hirshhorn, and I've talked to him in the past about his book, Pandemic Blunder. And we talked about what happened last year. How did we get to this point? And he says we had cheap available treatments, you know, ivermectin, HCQ. Why didn't we use these things? Exactly. So now the issue is the FDA approval. But he goes on. He says this was all talked about by ArmyTimes.com. Prepare for mandatory COVID vaccines in, wait for it, September. I told you that last September, didn't I? I said these things are going to be rolled out. They're going to be rolled out around the end of the year, the beginning of the year. I said that back in September. And I said, at first, they're not going to have manufacturing capacity, so they have to ramp up manufacturing capacity. Once they do, you're going to have all the people who are scared to death, who are huddled at home, who are wearing the mask. They're going to rush out and get it. They're going to fight over this. And then it's going to start to taper down. Then you're going to see all the propaganda stuff ramping up, and we saw that. We saw even the one thing that I did not anticipate was something as absurd as these vaccine lotteries. Oh, you can win $1 million. And here's a free donut in case you don't. And that was started by a Republican, Mike DeWine in Ohio, who's running for re-election. And he's got Trump supporting him, of course. Of course. They support each other. And then I said, then they're going to hit a wall because a lot of us aren't going to take it. And then you're going to see the demonization stage, which is where we are right now. These unvaccinated people, they're filthy, they're dirty. They are causing all of us who are vaccinated to have to continue to wear masks. We can't be free. We've got to have the social distancing and the mask because this person over here hasn't gotten their vaccine. And there's going to be a glut of these vaccines. And so those two factors and a big propaganda campaign to demonize us, to vilify us, that's going to culminate along with the desire to go back to school in the fall. And it's going to culminate in vaccine mandates coming up this fall. And here's what they're talking about, September for the military. He goes on to say, all branches will require vaccination on the same schedules from the DOD. It's not just the Navy that he works for. He said, I defy you to find a group of 2 million U.S. adults at a lower risk from COVID. It doesn't exist. We're overwhelmingly young, fit, free of comorbidities. Compared to other causes of death, COVID isn't even on the radar. And he doesn't have this here, but just think of it. Remember when we had the cruise ship, the Diamond Princess, that was anchored off of the coast of Japan? I think it was Fukushima that it was offered, but I don't recall if that was the name of the city. Anyway, it was there. And you had, out of a crew of several thousand people, you had 12 people who died, all of them very old and comorbidities, but you only had a small percentage of the people who even tested positive, and an even smaller percentage of that, less than 10%, who got sick. And yet you had a doctor who had been, he was an epidemiologist or a virologist, but he had been at the Ebola outbreaks, and he says, I've never been more afraid in my life, because he thought that it was everybody at that point in time. The news was everybody that gets this is going to die. Well, they didn't. Very few people, even with those old demographics in those isolated, unsanitary conditions. And that was the point. They were not isolated from each other. They were isolated from getting out. They wouldn't let them off the ship. They were living in close quarters, and they had no sanitary isolation from these people. That's why he was scared to death. Prior to anybody getting sick, of course, on a cruise ship, you're pretty much all eating collectively together, eating in cafeterias, mass, you know, people constantly doing that, and very small quarters. And so you had a very low number of people out of, I forget how many people it was on the ship, 3,000 or so, and they had 12 people who died eventually after several months of medical malpractice, many of them. But very few people actually got sick. It was less than 10% of the people who actually got sick. And when you look at remember we had an aircraft carrier. They relieved the guy of duty because the guy who was in charge of the aircraft carrier said, we got some people who have tested positive, and so we pulled into port. Nobody died off of that, right? That's exactly what he's saying. You compare the people who are on the aircraft carrier, much larger population than on the cruise ship, and some people tested positive. So what? It didn't make any difference. But the panic was so bad that the former captain of that ship took to port. Over 1,000 service members were killed on motorcycles between 1999 and 2012, yet we still permit motorcycles to be used by the military. He says, beyond the laughably insignificant threat posed by COVID to military forces who are young, who are fit, consider the aggressively unintelligent plan to expose the entire force to a drug that has zero long-term safety data. Flag and general officers running our military seem perfectly willing to potentially jeopardize 100% of the force in the name of potential agreeability with a politics, because that's what this is. Here's the plain truth, he says. COVID-19 is utterly inconsequential to the military. Don't get me wrong. Our response to it has been anything other than inconsequential. We've halted training. We've destroyed unit cohesion and morale. Yeah, because, you know, you got a division, the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated, those horrible unvaccinated people that are messing you up. So we've destroyed unit cohesion and morale. We have strapped worthless pieces of cloth over everybody's face for the last year, spectacularly destroyed our warfighting readiness in the name of COVID, but the pathogen itself is meaningless. And I just have to say, you know, why did the Trump, and a lot of people say, well, you know, Trump, he doesn't know what's going on. His defenders say that. He was just gaslighted, given bad advice. Well, how would this have been different? If only Trump, and there's an article here that I've got in the stack, guy going out and saying, what if on that March the 13th, he hadn't listened to Fauci? Now, this is preparing a long time before that, number one. The problem with that assumption is that this is a long time running. Number two, it continued for a very long time. So you're saying that not only did he get bad advice, but that he didn't know anything and still doesn't know anything? With all the stuff that's happening, he still doesn't know? If he is that clueless and if he is that spineless and stupid, why do we care about putting him in again? And yet you have 70% of the people at CPAC who are applauding. when you have a guy get up and say, we're not taking the vaccines. These are the Trump vaccines. He did it for the world, globally. So, yeah, what would have happened if he hadn't done that? There's so many things that he could have done, should have done, and easily could have done, and he didn't do it. In the same way that all this free speech lawsuit nonsense, as I said before, he didn't even have to use the power of the president. He was the biggest celebrity on Twitter. He made that platform much bigger than it was. He could have moved to another platform and done the same thing for it. But he didn't. So going back to why wherever his tweets, he says, we're just a few years removed from the military's mandatory anthrax vaccine debacle. Here's hoping the administration remembers what a disaster that was. Well, we do remember what a disaster that was. In just the short time that we have before Joel joins us, I think I'll stay with the some more of the letters. I have a question from Bruce and Angel Henley. They said it's okay to use their name, so I'll give the full name here. They said, for some time now, we've been seeing articles and videos on alternative media about how laboratories around the world have yet to isolate the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Have you seen the same talk, and is there any truth to it? Yes, I have seen that, and I have repeated some of those assessments. It's based on the idea that when several people have done this, they've filed requests with these different health organizations and said, we would like to get an isolated virus, and they continually say, well, it's not available. And you could look at that and say, well, are they saying that they don't have it in stock? They're out of stock and they're waiting for it to come along with the next order of toilet paper? Is it that type of thing? Or do they never have a completely isolated virus? So that is suspicious. It's not the argument that I've used because I think there are better arguments to use against this, but it's not something that I disagree with. I think that is highly suspicious. And then the question is, well, a follow-up question, then how do they know about the spike protein if they don't have the isolated virus? Well, the spike protein is designed, and whether or not they took it from a virus or not is, again, an open question. Is the fact that they said that they don't have the virus, is that semantics? Or you know, is that something that they don't have? I think that the vaccine itself, and the spike protein in particular, is the issue. And they all say that. They say, well, you know, it's the spike that's on the coronavirus, this particular coronavirus and this particular spike. That is what is dangerous with it. And we've isolated that, and we decided that we would inject you with that. And just stop and think about the whole principle of vaccines. What's the purpose of a vaccine? The stated purpose of a vaccine is to give you exposure to something that is weak or dead or, let's say, inactivated, right? But it is very similar to, you know, give you a dead virus, for example, so that your body's immune system can train to recognize that. And there isn't any vaccine that gives you immunity. Vaccines do not treat a disease that you have. The purpose of a vaccine is to train your immune system and to keep people from actually getting the disease. They would give them a weakened or dead form of whatever the pathogen was. And yet, in this particular situation, what they're doing is they're injecting you with the most toxic portion of the pathogen. Was that a mistake? Even if you believe that it's, and again, I think that is the key. The spike protein is the key question. Not so much whether or not the actual virus exists, but why would they inject you with something that they admit is the most virulent part of the virus? That's the question you should ask. About the insertion of the genetic code to make this virus different from the SARS-CoV-1, how do they craft a vaccine? How to identify a variant other than observation of systems? Is it possible that the vaccine was developed first, the virus later came? Yes. Sorry for all the questions, but these are issues that my wife and I keep batting around. And that's the key thing. If we get back to this, whether or not, and we can't prove that they don't have a virus. Again, this is like the Ashley Babbitt thing or the Sandy Hook thing. You can't prove that nobody died. You can't prove that they don't have a vaccine. What you can do is you can look at their death statistics and you can start to audit their assumptions, and you can see what they've told people. Just do a clinical diagnosis. We're not doing any autopsies. Just call it that. So you can look at the data that way, and you can analyze that type of data. It's not possible, really, to go in and definitively say that they don't have it. But again, it goes back to what is the purpose of a vaccine. It's to train your body to fight a disease. And to do that, you give people a weakened or dead version of the disease, not the most intense portion of it. And consider the fact that when they are doing this, it's not just giving you an injection of the spike protein. What they're doing is they're making your body into a factory. That's the way that Moderna described this. And so they're turning your body into something that manufactures the spike protein. So you're not given just a quantity of a very dangerous substance, according to them. Instead, your body is being trained to reproduce that deadly substance. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be joined by Joel Hirshhorn, and we're going to take this to the next step, and that is, what can we do to try to slow down or to resist this premature certification by the FDA to make this to dot the I's and to cross the T's, as Fauci said, and to make this an accepted medical product. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Okay, and also for the people who are listening and our new listeners at aftermath.fm, those beeps that you heard there, because I had somebody ask me about that, who listens to the program and doesn't watch it, those are where we told you about PayPal and Venmo. And they have now kicked us off of the financing platform. But there are other places like Zelle that we have now added to thedavidknightshow.com if you would like to support us. And, of course, there are new places where you can hear us, like aftermath.fm, where you can catch the live audio broadcast every morning as we're doing it. And I've been told that Travis said it looked like there was some issues with connecting to Restream, but we are live on DLive and Trovo. So we're good to go on that. And now joining us is Dr. Joel Hirshhorn. I talked about a little bit about his article yesterday about the FDA, the battle is on, and this is the central issue before us right now. Dr. Hirshhorn has written a book called Pandemic Blunder, talking about how we extended this thing by ignoring all the available treatments last year. But right now, the issue is, what is going to happen with the FDA? Are they going to approve this? And so joining us now is Dr. Joel Hirshhorn. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about your perspective on this. Of course, many things are being hinged upon this, and we've got a lot of people that are pushing very hard in the Biden administration, to go ahead and do the approval. We've had Fauci come out, and I played the clip yesterday where he said, hey, you got to understand, this thing is like done. It's gold. You know, all you got to do, and he even used the term, he says, we got to dot the I's and cross the T's. But, you know, they can rubber stamp it, right? They already rubber stamped the emergency authorization use, so they can rubber stamp this FDA approval at any point in time. And once they do, a lot of people, including Biden, have signaled their intention to start to mandate this, and it becomes a much more difficult thing to resist at that point, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think we have to recognize that we have increasing data coming actually from the government on the ill effects of the COVID vaccines. The official CDC numbers for death now is up to 9,000. Mm-hmm. And all of the sort of ill effects are about 500,000. So, and most research that I've seen, including some from Harvard University, says that the official CDC data system, theirs, may only be reporting about 1% of the deaths and ill effects.
Yeah, so that's a former HHS director, I think, that said that.
We have so many good people, so many great doctors, Harvey Reich from Yale, Peter McCullough from Baylor University, and on, the doctors that I really respect are all voicing serious concerns about FDA giving full approval because the safety of these vaccines has not been well researched. So it all comes down to a safety issue with regard to whether FDA should really give full approval to these vaccines.
Talk a little bit about the approval process, because, you know, when you have a regulatory agency like the FDA, I guess maybe it doesn't have the same procedure that you would have with, say, a rule coming out of the FAA, where they have a comment period and people are allowed to comment on that. And is that what is at play here with the FDA? Is there something else involved in the process? We just had an amazing story about this Alzheimer's drug, which we won't necessarily get into right now. That showed some pretty ugly things about the FDA approval process. But exactly how does this approval process work?
Well, they have the option to use committees and either to listen to what the committees say or to ignore it. But mostly in terms of public input, it's come down to petitions to FDA. And in that article that I recently wrote, I talked about the several major petitions coming from very serious physicians and medical researchers. Now, FDA can ignore these petitions, but these petitions are asking FDA to have more thorough research done, either by the drug companies or the FDA itself, on valid safety issues, okay? So, and so many people are acting rationally. Many Americans who are not getting the vaccine, they're not stupid.
That's right.
They're not anti-vaccine in general. Most of them are hearing about, slowly but surely, through alternative media, not big media, but they're hearing about these serious ill effects. I can tell you every day I'm reading cases of young people dying, people really getting very seriously ill pretty immediately after they take the vaccine shots. And this information is not being covered by what I call big media, corporate mainstream media. And this is a serious problem with whether we can have confidence in FDA and the government in general. So I would say at this point, the overwhelming amount of evidence that I see, I'm talking about medical scientific evidence, both from Europe and the U.S., is that there are too many uncertainties about the safety of these vaccines. And a lot of evidence, a lot of people getting deathly ill and dying, I want to emphasize, and dying soon after they take the vaccines. So I know that Fauci and those people will talk, well, we've given millions of shots of the vaccine, and they make it seem like all of these deaths and ill effects are insignificant. They're not insignificant. Peter McCullough, a great doctor from Baylor University, has said, in the past, if we would have seen this kind of data for a vaccine in terms of deaths and ill effects, FDA traditionally would have taken the vaccine off the market. That's
Absolutely.
What history has been.
That's right.
But in this case, in this pandemic, they're not taking the vaccines off the market.
That's right. Yeah, I've mentioned that many times. I said, you know, what other product would you have if it was a crib and you had a couple of kids that died? They would stop it right there, take it off the market and do an investigation. You had the 737 MAX. You had two plane crashes over 5 months. You had millions of people who had flown the 737 MAX and didn't die.
Right.
And yet, even with vaccines that have legal immunity because of what Fauci did back in 1986, as Peter McCullough just pointed out, he said, well, we would have, even with the vaccines, we would have stopped it at this point. When they talk about these different stories, the one I covered yesterday, which I thought was absolutely amazing over the weekend, Joel, they had every news organization, mainstream news organization, picked up the story of a 90-year-old woman who died in Belgium. And they said she had multiple variants, we think. And yet, they ignored all of the cases of these young people who died. And there was a story coming out of Italy that I covered where a surgeon said, in all my years, I've never seen anybody's brain attacked by blood clots like this young girl. And it was immediately after the vaccine. But there's silence about that. So they talk about a 90-year-old. They don't talk about the 19-year-old healthy girl who had something that a doctor has never seen before in his life. They just say, well, here's a warning, and we're on. And now they've got a new warning today about Guillain-Barré syndrome with Johnson & Johnson. But they put the warning there about myocarditis or Guillain-Barré and just keep going. Never slow down.
Absolutely, and that's the problem. And what I want to emphasize is that from Biden on down to Fauci, there's nothing but coercion now.
Yes.
In terms of coercion to get people to take, quote, the jab. And this makes, you know, this is dishonesty. A great physician is Robert Malone. I don't know whether you've looked into him. He's the guy who invented the technology, the genetic technology behind the two major vaccines. Robert Malone, a great physician and person. And he has also written now, come out on a number of podcasts, by the way, which have been banned from Yahoo for the most part. And he is saying exactly the same thing. It has to do with what we call medical freedom. People have forgotten this. We always had the freedom as individuals to decide for ourselves what medicines or vaccines to take. And now we have the government pressuring people, coercing people, as well as big employers and hospitals and universities and schools, coercing people to take a vaccine and not leaving it up to the freedom of individuals and the freedom of doctors, by the way. We have a lot of great doctors who are still using hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Mm-hmm. Before I came on your show this morning, I was reading a new research article, just came out, excellent article on ivermectin, again proving not only does ivermectin help cure COVID if you get it, but it acts as a prophylactic. You could take could take ivermectin, you can take hydroxychloroquine. These are valid preventive alternatives to the vaccines.
And yeah, we had an epidemiologist, I think she was out of Italy, and she went through and she compiled data out of country after country, region after region around the world, showing in the areas where they had ivermectin, it just dropped these cases to nothing. And then if they pulled it back like they did in some jurisdictions of India and then introduced a vaccine, it just went sky high. It's about informed consent, isn't it, Dr. Hirschhorn? It's really, and we've had that removed. We had the experts giving one side of the testimony, and I liken it to a grand jury proceeding rather than a real trial. In a grand jury proceeding, you only have the prosecutor. He's only presenting one side of this, and he can indict a ham sandwich. But in a real trial, you have experts that are brought in from both sides, and they have excellent credentials, and they present the evidence, and then the jury is allowed to, they have the task of deciding which group of experts is more credible. That's our task as patients. That's called informed consent. We are the jury. We need to be able to hear both sides and groups of experts. And you have in your article several reports, and you've got, 57 experts in one of them, several dozen in another. Talk a little bit about those reports that have been filed to the FDA.
Let me reveal two things you probably may not have heard yet. And I'm learning from good sources that in many places, people who are dying from taking the vaccine, those deaths are now being classified as COVID deaths, mm-hmm. not as vaccine deaths, mind you, but they're being officially classified as coming from COVID, the disease. And that's not true. These people are dying from the vaccine. Here's another interesting fact coming from the frontline doctors, George Farid in California. who's seeing, you know, he has like an urgent care kind of clinic. 10 to 1, the ratio of people coming in with vaccine problems are 10 times greater than the people coming in with COVID disease issues.
Yes.
10 times greater from vaccine. Wow. This is in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And if we look at the FDA and their evaluation of this, as you pointed out, they have scientific advisory committees. I mean, we look at this debacle that happened with Alzheimer's drug. Unbelievably expensive. The left got upset about this because they said this is going to bust financially bust the healthcare system. It's something like $50,000 a year. But you had the scientific advisory community virtually unanimously, I think it was like 11 or 12 people, all but one said no, this is not safe and effective. That one had abstained, and yet the FDA approved it anyway. Now they've got an investigation. The FDA called for the inspector general to investigate this approval process because it was revealed by Stat News, a trade publication, that you had close relationships and other things, coordination between FDA officials and the company that was selling this drug, Biogen, going back a couple of years pushing this. So when we look at this, Dr. Hirschhorn, can we trust the FDA evaluation to be honest on this?
No, we can't trust it at all. And some of the people who were getting access to mainstream media, there was a doctor who got an op-ed published in the New York Times, and he was backing approval of the vaccines. So I dug into his history, and what did I learn? He was getting enormous sums of money from NIH, okay?
Uh-huh.
he had financial interest in six companies related to healthcare. So you have to look into these individuals on the wrong side of this issue. There are some doctors getting access to mainstream media backing approval.
Mm-hmm.
These are doctors not to be trusted.
Yes.
The doctors on the other side opposing immediate approval, Rice from Yale, McCullough from Baylor, many other great doctors. These are the doctors you can trust. So we have to look into who these individuals are and their access to media, but also their influence on FDA.
Yes.
FDA chooses, the members of its committees, okay?
Yes.
At this point, based on everything that's happened with the what I call pandemic mismanagement, okay? And remember, the government is still blocking the use of these treatment protocols.
Yes.
Particularly ivermectin. Mm-hmm. And this is a rational alternative for people taking the vaccine. And I want to again emphasize, half of the country, about 150 million people, have gotten natural immunity. This is such an important issue. Once you've had some infection, and for the vast majority have had no ill effects, but what they did get, the advantage of being infected at some point, is that you get natural immunity. If you have natural immunity, every good doctor, Rice from Yale has said this, many others, you do not need the vaccine. In fact, as we dig deeper into why some of these people are dying and having these blood clot problems, et cetera, most of the time it's going to be because they had natural immunity and then they're getting an artificial immunity from the vaccine. And when you put those two together, you're basically wrecking the immune system of the individual. So that's when they get ill.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the whole purpose of a vaccine, isn't it, to train the immune system. And so if your immune system has not been trained with the real thing, it remembers and it doesn't disappear. And of course, let me just point out to the audience that you are a member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You're a full professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And it's good to hear people who are doctors, who are professionals, to talk about this. As you're pointing out, the people that we're seeing that are the experts that are put out by mainstream media, typically they're at the top. And we're hearing a lot from physicians, like the frontline doctors, who yes. are there at the front line actually doing treatment, and they're actually concerned about the health of their patients, like Dr. Zelenko at the very beginning of this. He said, well, I'm trying to do what I can to save their lives. That's his concern. These other people are, they're working with the big pharmaceutical companies, they're working with the big bureaucracies, they're working with academia. Yes. They have a different motivation, a very different motivation in all of this.
Absolutely. And Zelenko, I still am in contact with him. He wrote the foreword for my book, and he's still using ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, as is George Farid and many other great frontline doctors around the country. And I want to emphasize, individuals can get, even though they're prescription medicines, there are ways for Americans to get ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine so that they have their own option, medical option, other than taking a vaccine.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. How do you get these things? And I mean, I guess, is it possible? Because at one point in time, you had governors like Gretchen Whitmer that were threatening doctors who would prescribe HCQ or pharmacists who would fill those prescriptions. She was threatening them with their license being removed. What is the situation right now with those drugs in terms of physicians being able to put that out to people? And then what is the situation, as you pointed out, with even though it is a prescription drug, what is the situation of you being able to acquire it yourself?
There are a couple of websites mm-hmm. that people can go to, America's Frontline Doctors, the group that you just mentioned, and you can get these drugs. I want to emphasize, it takes courage for American doctors to give these drugs to their patients, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just got an email this morning with a long list of physicians in the United States that have lost their jobs or lost their medical license because there is retribution going on the part of particularly state governments.
Wow.
And some big systems. A doctor was recently fired from the Mayo Clinic system, okay?
Hmm.
So it takes courage. I just read something that 80 or 90% of American doctors work for hospital systems. And these hospital systems follow the guidance from NIH, FDA, CDC, and so those doctors are not going to be able to prescribe ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine to their patients because they work for hospital systems,
wow.
big corporate systems.
Yeah, yeah. And they're looking at what people are prescribing, right? You got somebody reviewing their prescriptions all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I tested this out. I asked my my primary care doctor who works for a hospital system. He laughed when I asked him, "Will you give me a prescription of hydroxychloroquine?" He laughed at me. He said, "I can't do it. I can't do it." I said, "I'm doing research on this. I know the benefits." And by the way, articles are coming out virtually every week now showing that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are effective. But there's so many lies being told by big media and some government people like Fauci. They're lying about the treatment,
yes.
okay, that we know works. And you mentioned India. I want to point out, When they dropped ivermectin, their cases went up. But then in some states, they went back to ivermectin.
Yes.
And the cases dropped immediately.
That's right.
So we have these kinds of interesting experiments being done. And this was also happened in Switzerland once, but it just recently happened in India. So we know that these treatments work. I can't emphasize that enough. Americans deserve, with medical freedom, they have the right to choose between a very unsafe vaccine at this point and a treatment protocol that has no bad side effects whatsoever. By the way, both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, fully approved by the FDA. The vaccines that the government is pushing on people, not fully approved by the FDA.
Yes, of course. And of course, when the FDA does this type of thing, they say, well, it's off-label use because we fully approved it, and we've been using it for a lot of chronic conditions for 60 years or whatever, and all of these effects are well-known, and it's been approved for those, but you can't use it for this other stuff. We're not going to allow you to use it for that. That's the other game that they play. But, you know, when you're talking about the hospital guidelines, they're not just following these guidelines, are they, Dr. Hirschhorn? They're getting major financial incentives to follow these guidelines.
Yep.
I mean, you do a clinical diagnosis of somebody as having COVID, $13,000 check they cut to you. You put them on an intubator, a ventilator, and you get another $39,000. And then it came out this summer, you had American Hospital Association protesting the Medicare rules, saying, well, we got to see your test data. They said, you told us that you didn't have enough tests. You told us to do a clinical diagnosis, and yours is supposed to give us is either 20 or 25% bonus for everything that they did to a COVID patient. So, of course, they've been amazingly incentivized to discover COVID patients and to report
them.
And
let me give you a piece of new information. I just learned this past week. What's going on now is another fiasco. People who are dying after taking the vaccine are being officially classified as COVID deaths.
Yes.
Now think about that. Because if they're classified as COVID deaths, then you have financial rewards. If they're classified as dying because they took the vaccine, there's no financial reward for the hospital who's reporting this.
And they're calling it a breakthrough case. Yeah. So it's a breakthrough case. So they, even though they got vaccinated, the vaccine didn't work. The COVID broke through and the COVID killed them. And we're seeing the kinds of statistics coming out of the Biden administration saying, well, you know, we got 99.5% of the people dying are the people who are unvaccinated. And yet we just saw that we had just under 5,000 people they admitted had died of the so-called breakthrough virus. They're playing with these numbers pretty fast and loose, aren't they?
Absolutely. Now, I wrote an article a few weeks ago. CDC cut back on the data it was collecting on breakthrough cases, meaning cases where people were vaccinated and still getting COVID, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They cut back on getting the data on breakthrough cases. This was amazing. You'd think they want more data, not less data, but that's what CDC did. At the beginning of June, actually.
Yeah. And at the about that time, about the end of May, I think it was Kit Knightley at Off Guardian pointed out that they were going to actually use a different level of cycle threshold, a different level of magnification for people who had been vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. And they were not going to count people, no matter how sick you were, they were not going to count you as a case if you were not hospitalized or if you did not die. Those are the only conditions that they would count you as a case.
That's right.
Yeah, and now they're saying that's just COVID that killed you. It wasn't the vaccine that killed you.
No, there are so many awful things going on. We're dealing with a very corrupt system.
Yeah.
In every respect. You know, you mentioned the money in hospitals. I deal with a lot of physicians around the world now, and I'm telling you that there are medical researchers who can't get their articles published in the big medical journals. Where do the big medical journals get their money from? They get it from advertising from big drug companies.
Yes.
So those big medical journals will not publish good medical research articles showing that vaccines are dangerous or showing that hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin work. Okay, so we have a kind of censorship going on in terms of medical journals. This is a very, very sick, corrupt situation.
Yeah, and you think about this as kind of what we were warned about by Eisenhower in terms of the military-industrial complex and academic complex, he originally said. And it was the fact that the government was going to be controlling all the money, all the research. And so now you have the mainstream media is getting financed largely by pharmaceutical companies going back to the 90s when they started doing the Ask Your Doctor commercials. They became their major sponsors. The government is also a heavy hitter in terms of the research grants that are being applied to these people. So if they fund it, they're now exercising that. They're not interested in free speech. They're interested in pushing an agenda, which usually has economic aspects to it as well. And that is really what is just killing science at this point. I mean, everybody who's honest and looking at this just shaking their head and saying, why can we not have a scientific debate? Why are we censoring one side of the argument here?
Right. And the government people are not following the science. Public health people are not following the science.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you mentioned the money in the government. I always like to point out about Dr. Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
He has the biggest sum of money at NIH. He gives out over $3 billion a year in grants. When you're giving out year after year after year such huge amounts of money, that money is going to academics, you know, physicians working in universities, medical researchers in universities. Although the whole medical system gets corrupted by the grants from Fauci at NIH. Yeah. So that's why so many doctors, good doctors, can't speak out publicly. Mm-hmm. If they're depending on grants from Fauci at NIH.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of the, I guess you'd call him the Moriarty of the deep state. or the godfather, right? Fauci is the godfather. And it goes back to last year, you know, when we knew about hydroxychloroquine. And we're starting to hear some stuff about ivermectin. We heard about HCQ first.
Yes.
And yet, you know, he was trashing it left and right and then pushing remdesivir, which he had pushed for his friends at Gilead twice before for Ebola and also for AIDS. And it had been rejected for those two things. It looked like the patent was about to expire. So he pronounced it the standard of care, even though he changed the definition of what an effective drug was to get it to go out there. It didn't help people get better any better, but he changed the definition for effective to say, well, the people that did recover got better 30% faster. And on that basis, he declared it the standard of care. And then it was subsequently, it had been discredited with earlier studies before he released his peer-reviewed study. Then it was discredited after they sold billions of dollars worth of remdesivir. It's absolutely criminal what he's been doing in terms of these connections. And he's had long connections with Moncef Slaoui going back to 2009 and the pandemics.
Yeah, when we talk about criminality, I think that's a good issue, David.
Yeah,
and in Europe, what there's a lot of talk about is the Nuremberg Code.
Yes.
The code that after World War II to condemn what the Nazis did in terms of human experimentation. And that's what people are saying is going on now. We're telling people to take experimental vaccines and basically treating the whole population, the whole global population, as guinea pigs.
Yes.
In a vast experiment that they are not well informed about in terms of the risks. Mm-hmm. And that's what's coming out every day now in the research literature that I read, is that when you look at the risk-benefit ratio, there is no good risk-benefit ratio for a large segment of the population. Remember, we should always go back to the statistics. The vast majority of people who do get COVID do not have ill effects and do not die. The survival rate, if you're under 70, is almost 100%. So here we are talking about a pandemic as if people are dying left and right, when in fact it's a certain fraction of the population, the elderly particularly, who are at risk. But when you get down to the younger people, and especially young children and adolescents and healthy young people, there is no justification for taking the risk of the vaccine in terms of the benefit that you get. So it's not just that you have the option of taking treatment drugs like hydroxy and ivermectin. It's also face reality. Why would you take a vaccine when you are in the vast majority of people that don't have any great benefit from taking the vaccine? And now you're at risk because of all of the deaths and side effects, ill effects of taking the vaccine. So the whole system is completely out of whack, basically.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the process of this, because you're talking about the fact that people in the Nuremberg Code, people are unpaid volunteers, assuming that you don't count the free donuts at Krispy Kreme that you get for a year. That's the only payment they're offering as an incentive. Or you could win $1 million, who knows? But they're basically unpaid and uninformed, and that's the key thing about the Nuremberg experiment. And talk about what typically the process is for the approval of a vaccine and how long it runs and why that's important.
Well, a normal approval process would go on for 2, 3, 4 years, maybe more, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't go through. And that's what Robert Malone has pointed out, the inventor of this genetic technology. He said, we rushed it all through. We couldn't possibly have explored and researched all of the safety issues. For example, I'll give you a concrete example. When these big drug companies did their trials that FDA accepted, they left out all kinds of segments of the population. They left out pregnant women. They left out, by the way, people with natural immunity. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we did Operation Warp Speed, sounded great, except that we rushed it. We rushed the for emergency youth authorization. We rushed the process through, and that's why they haven't been able to give full approval. And I think, again, the critical issue right now, David, is whether all these petitions that have gone into FDA by very prestigious medical people, very prestigious, whether FDA will respect these petitions and all the evidence being given to them to hold off on full approval. You know, even one petition said, take away emergency youth authorization. Peter McCullough also backed that.
Yes, I agree. I agree. You look at this as they only had 2 or 3 months that they actually did an evaluation on it. And Dr.
Right.
Hirschhorn, what it reminds me of, coming from an engineering background, there was a book about 40 years ago called The Mythical Man Month. And they talk about the fact that the conceit is that if you got a big engineering project, software or something like that, typically software, well, instead of having one programmer who is working on this, add 10 programmers and you'll get it done 10 times faster. And that was a joke. It was... We talk about that all the time because actually by bringing in too many people, you actually slow the thing down. But in this particular case, because you're looking at effects that take a while to develop biologically in each and every person, that is why you have to run this out for 2, 3, 4 years, not for 2 or 3 months.
Absolutely. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how any rational American at this point could possibly trust FDA or Fauci. And Fauci just said the other day, he expects FDA to fully approve the vaccines. Of course, Fauci basically exercises power and control over FDA and CDC. He is that powerful. Okay,
yeah, that's right. We could just call it the Fauci Drug Administration.
Absolutely.
Or maybe just the effing Drug Administration, if we want to be rude, right?
Yeah. I like that one, though, Fauci.
yeah. That's what it has become. He pretty much controls everything. He's the highest paid government employee. He makes more than the president does. And he's been there forever. He's been in that position since 1985, 1986. It's absolutely amazing the power that this man has. He is a consummate politician. The people who were trying to get something done with suffering from AIDS who went up there, they were warned. One of them warned the other people. They said, "You got to watch out for Fauci. He will butter you up one side and down the other, and then stab you in the back." I mean, this guy is the consummate politician. You don't stay in that position that many years through that many different administrations, you know, from Reagan on, without being in that kind of a position. So, well, that is the key thing, and it is important when people look at this to understand that there are competing experts out there. That's the point of your article, FDA, the battle is on. And by Dr. Joel Hirschhorn, that's the key thing to understand. There are different opinions out there by different experts, and we need to be able to evaluate those honestly. We need to understand the FDA has not evaluated things in the past honestly and candidly, just in the very, very recent past, the worst example of that. But we need to understand how this is going to be used. And so people need to get proactive about it. What you had to tell us is very important, especially about being able to have access yourself to hydroxychloroquine, to ivermectin, to things that work, because we now have financially incentivized malpractice. We have pressure and punishment put on physicians who put their patients' health first. And as you point out, many people have been injured by that. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Joel Hirschhorn. And your book, Pandemic Blunder, is available on Amazon. That's probably the best place to find it.
Yes, it's, you know, they have a print edition, a Kindle edition, and now an audio edition. And I do want to point out a great website, trialsitenews.com, because that's where I'm publishing more now, and other great people like Paul Alexander. You can find the truth about the pandemic on trialsitenews.com.
Very important. Yes. Yes, that's where I got your article. Trialsitenews.com is where you can find Dr. Hirschhorn's article about the FDA and the key aspect of that. And they understand that. And they're talking about this themselves. And it's going to be, once they approve this, once they rubber stamp it, dot that I and cross that T, then they're going to really start pushing the mandates. And I think it's they're building up to that now. It's a propaganda campaign to demonize the people who are not doing it. We're foolish. We're stupid. We're vermin who are going to get them all sick. And we're making their life miserable. And everybody could go about their life just normally if we would all take the vaccine. That's what we're going to see happening. And then the FDA will come in with a killer stroke, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and that will be when it really gets nasty, because that's when the mandates are going to come from government.
Yep.
That's when the mandates are going to come. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Joel Hirshhorn. Thank you. It's a pleasure talking
to you. Thank you, David.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Stay with us. Thank you, Dr. Hirshhorn. Always send the articles to us, and when you got something you want to talk about, great talking to you. Thank you. The Common Man.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
One question. You're with America, America's Frontline Doctors.
They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. All right, and while we're on the topic of Big Pharma, let's take a look at their bottom line. This really is the bottom line, folks. Money. Money for these people. The root of all evil is the love of money. It's not just having the money, but that's not necessarily an evil thing. But the love of it. And I think these people, when it starts to come in by the truckloads, it's pretty hard not to love the stuff and the things that you can get with it, I guess. With the Fed's help, Moderna forecasts a record revenue of $19.2 billion. This is an article from UncoverDC.com, an excellent article. Listen to this and the financial history of Moderna. And I pointed out that many times the connection between Fauci and Slowey. These two guys have been together for a long, long time, and their previous caper was the Pandemrix vaccine. Put out as part of the H1N1 swine flu pandemic. Remember when everybody was dying of that? Oh, that's right. I played the news reports for you where they said, well, you know, a year ago, look at the number of stories we did, the local news did a follow-up. They said, almost every story was about the swine flu, and we were hitting this thing constantly. We had hundreds of stories, and now it's just disappeared. Where did it all go? And we got refrigerators full of the vaccines. What happened with that? They were very upset about the fact they only got 25% of the people to take the vaccine, and yet that disappeared. How did they get herd immunity when only 25% of the people took the vaccine? And you wouldn't have known that it was a pandemic if the news wasn't telling you around the clock that it was. And yet that vaccine that they rushed to market, Pandemrix, is the best documented case of adverse effects before these Trump vaccines that we've ever had. And that happened because it took a year for the side effects to showing up first in children, as is usually the case. It took about a year for it to show up with narcolepsy and catalepsy, freezing where you can't move, or narcolepsy where you just suddenly fall asleep. You can't live a life that way. Many of the young children who suffered from that, by the time they got in their 20s, they had a very high rate of suicide because it was so difficult to live with narcolepsy. So many things shut down in their life. They can't live that way. And so that was their previous partnership, Fauci and Slowey. Now, that was when Slowey was with, GlaxoSmithKline, if I remember correctly. And then he left to be one of the head honchos with Moderna.
And they started working on this thing, but it was in 2013, as this article points out, that DARPA in 2013 gave Moderna $25 million to help it to develop the mRNA technology back in 2013. Preparing this, scientists from the NIH are involved in many associated patents for the mRNA vaccine. You think maybe Fauci's got some financial money in that? In 2018, amid an otherwise turbulent market and operating at over a quarter of a $1 million annual loss, Moderna pulled off one of the biggest IPOs of the year. At the time, the company that was a little less than 10 years old, it started in 2010, so it was 8 years in, and really until we had this COVID vaccine, Moderna had never brought to market a single therapeutic or vaccine. They'd had no product for 10 years, and yet they'd raised a tremendous amount of money. How? By happy stories on Wall Street. And so they'd operated for 8 years. They'd had seed money from DARPA. And then they went public in 2018. They had lost $250,000. They'd been in business for 8 years, had not had a single product, and yet they had one of the biggest IPOs of the year. They had a $7.5 billion IPO when it came out. Why? Because of the people who were backing them. The Pentagon, the military-industrial complex, the deep state. The same people who funded and backed these technology companies that have now emerged as the oligarchs of the internet. They also got their start from DARPA, from NQTEL, the CIA venture capital firm. So they bankroll them, keep them going for 8 years. They do a massive IPO. And fast forward to the first quarter of this year, Moderna generated $1.73 billion. However, they're on target to jump up now to nearly $20 billion this year. As the Moderna CEO, Stéphane Bancel, recently said, 12 months ago, quarter one, 2020, Moderna had never run a phase three clinical study, never gotten a product authorized by a regulator, and never made 100 million doses in a single quarter. And this is when you had Fauci bring in Moncef Slaoui to head up Operation Warp Speed for President Trump. You saw the conference where he goes around the table with all these pharmaceutical executives. How long will it take you? No, that's not fast enough. How about you? Well, I can do a little bit. How about you? Punchline, they go to Moderna and said, we've already got it. We're ready to go. All right, you're our boy. Give them a lot of money. It was set up. The whole thing was set up. You want to talk about Trump being on the outside? This whole thing was a DARPA military-industrial complex set up just like the entire Trump presidency was. So, in April of 2020, Moderna got $483 million from BARDA. That's the biological weapon aspect of DARPA, right? BARDA for the COVID-19 vaccine. And then they dumped an additional $500 million on them in June. So just billions here and billions there. Who cares, right? Pretty soon it's real money for those guys. Meanwhile, as debates and concerns about vaccinating children increase, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, recently announced that BARDA had expanded its collaboration with Moderna to expand the development of this COVID vaccine, the mRNA vaccine. Listen to this, what this is called. It's called the KidCOVE. The KidCOVE study. BARDA is providing program management in support of up to an additional $144 million in funding to KidCOVE to include approximately 7,000 children ages 6 months to 12 years old. The KidCOVE study, listen to the title of this. Phase 2 and 3, two-part, open-label, dose escalation, age de-escalation. Now, repeat that. Dose escalation, age de-escalation, and randomized observer-blind placebo-controlled expansion study to evaluate the safety, tolerability, reactogenicity, and effectiveness of the mRNA-1273 SARS-CoV-2 vaccine in healthy children in 6 months to less than 12 years of age. That's the title of the study. But the two phrases that I want to focus on is dose escalation and age de-escalation. What these people are doing to the bodies of children is what the Drag Queen Story Hour is designed to do to their spirit and their soul. Destroy it. And so as they escalate the levels of this, listen, children will be given up to 3 dose levels of the experimental product in 2 doses, 28 days apart. So they're experimenting with the dose levels. And why is this important? And I've mentioned this before and tied it back to fluoridation of water. Regardless of what you think about fluoridation of water, we all know that the difference between a medicine and a poison is the dosage, isn't it? And we also know there's been ample studies from Harvard and others where they see that too much fluoride in the water will cause a significant loss of IQ points in children when they're exposed to that. So how do we control that dosage? Well, it's very simple. We just dump it in the water. What? How do we control the doses if fluoride is supposed to be good for your teeth, right? So you should swallow it. Well, that's not what the toothpaste tube says. Toothpaste, the back of your toothpaste tube, if you have fluoridated toothpaste, the back of it says, if you swallow this stuff, call poison control. So why would we swallow our toothpaste? Why would we swallow the water with fluoride in it? And how do we know what the dosage is going to be? Assuming that the dose is uniformly distributed in the water, and I think that's not a reasonable assumption, but let's just assume that for simplicity's sake. What dosage are they putting in the water? Are they giving the same dosage to adult males as they are to children? And are they giving the same dosage to these children as they are to adults? Why do they have to experiment with the dose levels for children? That's what I want to know. I mean, do they not know what the appropriate level is for an adult? Are they still experimenting with the dose level of this stuff? I would think that at this point, since we're ready to do FDA approval, right? We were just talking to Joel Hirshhorn about that. These people say the science is settled. Fauci said, "Yeah, we've never done anything. This is golden. Right? We've vaccinated so many millions of people, and the clock is running on the long term side effects." Again, prior to this, we've never seen a vaccine that has had immediate effects like this. That keeps going. They would pull a vaccine off the market if it had these immediate adverse effects that we've seen with these vaccines. But they just keep going. It's the Energizer bunny. And they're energizing their wallets. And so even though this is supposedly very well understood, and now they're going to extend it to children, wouldn't you think that if they're going to extend it to children, they would not have to experiment with these doses? And we don't know if these doses are as high as they are with adults, if they're lower. This is where they are right now. They point out that even when the company went public, Moderna, at the end of 2018, at a $23 value, again, they had a $7.5 billion IPO when they went public in 2018. Now, thanks to Trump and Fauci, you know where their market cap is now? 88.3 is their market cap, $1 billion. They've gone and they've got $8 billion in cash. So they had $7.5 billion was their total market cap in 2018. Thanks to Trump and Fauci, it's now more than 10 times what it was a couple of years ago. And they have more in cash than they did in their entire market cap. And this is one of the reasons why Moncef Slaoui, Stefan Bancel. I don't know how much Slaoui has made. But Bancel is now one of the newly minted billionaires. He went from zero to like a $4 billion net worth last year. Why? Because of the stock market capitalization, because that's how they figure their net worth, is by the value of the shares of stock. So when you got a company that the stock has shot from a market cap of $7.5 billion to $88 billion, he's got enough of a share in that that it made him a $4 billionaire. absolutely criminal. Let me give you another example that is outside of the drug industry, and it's Nancy Pelosi. You know, we had Nancy Pelosi caught by 60 Minutes a few years ago when they actually used to do investigations. And they found her doing insider trading, especially around her husband. They exposed it. It was embarrassing for her. She came up with the Stock Act, they called it. And it was legal at the time for members of Congress and for their staff to do insider trading, the same stuff that they sent the decorator lady. I can't remember her name right now, but they actually did not send her to jail for that. They sent her to jail. They didn't find her guilty of Martha Stewart. They didn't find her guilty. See, it takes a while. I'm getting older. It's eventually there, but the retrieval rates are slowing down. Martha Stewart went to jail, not for insider trading. That's what they accused her of. Since they couldn't get her on insider trading, they got her on lying to the FBI. You know, that game, the manufactured crime. But in response to Nancy Pelosi's insider trading, her first defense was, it's not illegal. I can do insider trading all I want, and so can my staff. So they created, that was an outrage in and of itself. So they created the Stock Act. And then within a year, it was about 9 months later, they eviscerated it. So they did a big public display about how they were going to stop insider trading by Congress. And then they took that away, made it of no effect. So when we look at this contract that I was talking about, it's very interesting to understand these players and how corrupt Washington is, to look at what happened with Amazon and Microsoft around this Pentagon data cloud contract that they called JEDI, Joint Enterprise Data, something like that. But that was their acronym, but it became the JEDI project. And at the center of it all was General Mattis, when he was still a hero to Trump and to the MAGA crowd. People who were investigating this says it looks like this contract was specifically written for Amazon. As a matter of fact, Mattis had made trips away, but especially his close assistant had made many, many trips to Amazon headquarters out in Seattle to hammer down the details of this. So when this contract came through, you had Nancy Pelosi's husband buying options on it. And it was questioned by Donald Trump because he does not like Jeff Bezos and vice versa. Jeff Bezos mouthpiece, the Washington Post, that he bought for a pittance based on the amount of money that he has. He got it for a measly $250 million, I pointed out at the time, based on the amount of money that he was making off his stock purchases. It was less than you and I would spend on groceries with a median family income. He was able to get the Washington Post. And you talk about having political leverage in Washington, that's how Jeff Bezos operates. He's very smart. So he got the Washington Post. He used that for leverage. He used it for leverage against President Trump. And then President Trump looked at the contract and he said, I'm not sure. I think this contract was biased towards Amazon. And subsequent to that, the Pentagon awarded the contract to Microsoft several months later. Amazon filed a lawsuit arguing that the Trump administration had interfered in the process. They won a restraining order to block Microsoft from the beginning work on the project. And then just this last week, as I pointed out, the Pentagon has now said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to split the baby. We're going to come up with a new contract, and we're going to split that contract pretty much equally between Microsoft and Amazon. Now, enter the Pelosi's. How did Pelosi's husband play this? Well, the Biden Pentagon on this last Tuesday abruptly announced that it was canceling its multi-billion-dollar JEDI cloud services contract with Microsoft. This is an article from Breitbart. Amazon had been favored, actually they've been created to win the JEDI contract, after the idea for a single cloud infrastructure was first conceived back in 2017. But as I point out, it was eventually given to Microsoft. Now, when the Pentagon came out with the JEDI contract, you started having, and they went back and they looked at, Breitbart went back and looked at the stock trades from Nancy Pelosi's husband. And just over a month ago, on May the 21st, Paul Pelosi bought call options worth between $500,000 and $1 million. And on that day, he also bought Apple call options worth between $100,000 and $250,000. So these are much bigger, the bet that he put on the Amazon situation. So they went back and they looked at his financial disclosure reports dating back to 2009. They found that Pelosi's husband has a history of purchasing Amazon call options centered around the Jedi program-related milestones of the past. Back in mid-2017, the Pentagon, under then-Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, again, Mad Dog Mattis was working on a corrupt deal with Amazon. He created this contract to give it to them, and it was pretty much an open secret. Everybody knew that. So at that point in time, you had Paul Pelosi, Nancy's husband, go in on July 26th, as soon as they finalized their request for proposal for the Jedi program. He bought a lot of Amazon call options the next day, as much as $6 million worth. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi's sitting on a big wad of cash, isn't she? Oracle cried foul. They said, we're not included in this. It was supposed to only be Amazon. Somehow Microsoft, with its political connections, got in there, but Oracle got muscled out. And they had Amazon's attorneys fought the pushback from Oracle and made sure that they were excluded. So it looked like they were doing good. They had the defense secretary on their side. They were able to muscle out Oracle, but then Microsoft, with all of its connections, the military-industrial complex muscled itself in. That's when Trump got involved, and eventually, as I pointed out, they did that. And then, as we've had this baby-splitting thing, next purchase of the Pelosi's came weeks after a flurry of positive developments for Amazon. On May 21st, Pelosi purchased more Amazon call options worth as much as $1 million. And when called out on all this insider trading, Nancy Pelosi, spokesperson, told Fox News the speaker has no involvement or prior knowledge of any of these transactions. The speaker does not own any stock. Ah, that's right. It's Paul Pelosi who owns the stock, right? And I'm sure they don't ever talk to each other about what she's doing so that he could use it to make very well-timed and placed purchases in the stock market at all. That would never happen. As a matter of fact, maybe we ought to look to see what kind of a stock portfolio Fauci's wife has. Or maybe his kids, who knows? Or maybe Fauci himself. He's got so much political clout, he could probably get away with it just like Nancy Pelosi. And so then we see, as this is all about money, isn't it? The FDA attaches a warning of rare nerve syndrome to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, reported by the New York Times and Washington Post yesterday afternoon. And it's the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that was the one that was going to be pushed. You know, we saw that in the script. I talked about that yesterday, you know, going door to door and said, yeah, we got the Johnson & Johnson. Like, well, I don't know. I'd rather have the heart attack one from Pfizer. No, the Johnson & Johnson's much better because we don't have to worry about refrigerating it. And you only have to get one shot and you're done, so to speak. So that is the one that they continue to push. And it's so fortunate, too, really, for Johnson & Johnson. I gotta admire their timing, just like the Pelosi's timing. You know, we've had the Afghanistan war running for a long time. And, you know, the Taliban had taken the opioid market down to basically nothing in Afghanistan until we went in. And then it went from like 10% of the world's market to up in the 90s and setting new record bumper crops every year, as we had the troops guarding the poppy fields to make opium and opioids. And now, as that is passing out of our control, surprise, surprise, Johnson & Johnson and these other companies, they pay a small slap on the wrist fine for the massive opioid epidemic that they've inflicted on America and the rest of the world. And they move on to the vaccine just in time. That's a slick move. Very sharp. Very sharp. As a matter of fact, I had some people commenting on what I had to say about the Afghan war. And I don't know where they got the idea. I don't know if they actually watched the video or not, but they got the idea somehow based on their prejudice or their preformed bias or whatever, that I somehow support the Afghanistan war. I mean, those of you who have listened to me for years, that's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen in your life. No, I talked about the spiraling, out-of-control, collapse, retreat, runaway I didn't say, well, what we need to do is we need to throw more troops in there. We need to do another Petraeus surge so we can win this thing. You've never heard me say that. I wasn't applauding the surge when it was being done by Petraeus, and they were claiming that it was working. We had no business being there. It was corrupt from the beginning. It was morally, legally corrupt from the beginning. It was based on the lie of 9/11. And the shame about all of this is that it's gone through one administration after another, Republican as well as Democrat, that it went through the entire Trump administration without fulfilling his campaign promise. It was clear. It was clear a year ago, 2 years ago, that there was no military way that we were going to win that war. They could have done an orderly withdrawal. Instead, they wait until the 11th hour and bug out at the dead of night, because that's the state of our bipartisan disaster that we call Pentagon and Washington and the deep state. I talked about that and ridiculed the pulling out and the way that it was done. Talked about how it was very predictable. It was even predicted as a satire 10 years ago by The Onion. Because we all knew that this is the way it was going to happen. It was all going to end in a Saigon moment, and it is spiraling down even faster now. And we should have never been there. It was clear we were never going to win that war. And if anybody had had a backbone or the courage to do something about it, a President Trump or President Obama or any of these people, if they weren't controlled by the military-industrial complex, just like they're controlled by the globalists, if they were not controlled puppets, if they were not worried about it happening on their watch, they could have pulled out in an orderly fashion. They could have done it decades ago. We didn't need to be there in the first place. But instead, it was going to devolve to and Biden is not a hero for getting out. That's the other thing I saw. Well, at least Biden did something right. No, he didn't do it right. He's getting out because he can't stay. This is not a decision. The decision's not being made by him. It's being made for him by the opposition. They're cutting tail and running because there's nothing else at this point in time that they can do except to abandon it. So the FDA, as they've been pushing the Johnson & Johnson with the Biden administration vaccine, now they come out and say, well, it's connected with Guillain-Barré. Blood clots, heart attack issues, brain destruction, all kinds of nervous disorders. And, of course, Guillain-Barré is a autoimmune disease, nervous disease, a nerve disorder. You remember the 60 going again to 60 Minutes back in 1976, Mike Wallace, Chris Wallace's father, the guy who was the real journalist, when he did the investigation of the 1976 swine flu, the lady that he talked to, throughout, it's kind of her central story as the person, one the poster child, if you will, of people who were injured by that unnecessary, hastily rushed vaccine about something that was not a pandemic. They completely deconstructed the lies about the 1976 swine flu that supposedly began in a military base with a healthy soldier who collapsed, and it was absolute nonsense. He had a drill sergeant who tried to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. The drill sergeant didn't get sick and die. So it was not a pandemic, but they sold it to everybody. They got this lady afraid. She said, well, if this happens to a healthy young soldier, I've got some health issues, so maybe I should take the vaccine. She wound up paralyzed for a very long time. After many years of therapy, she was able to walk with the aid of leg braces and a cane, but she would never have full use of her legs again. That was Guillain-Barré. That is a very common side effect of all vaccines, of flu vaccines as well. As a matter of fact, I knew the last 2 years, I've known two people who got the flu vaccine who got Guillain-Barré syndrome. Fortunately, they did not have a permanent case of paralysis, but they wound up in the hospital for quite some time. But nevertheless, you have the FDA coming out and saying, well, the available evidence, we're putting a warning in here, it suggests an association, but it's probably just a coincidence, right? We're coincidence theorists. But, you know, we want to be safe, so we're going to put a warning in there. But it is insufficient for us to establish a causal relationship, and, of course, nothing is going to be sufficient for them to stop any of these Trump global vaccines. Nothing is going to stop them. So it causes muscle weakness, occasional paralysis, and sometimes it is lifelong. And then the comments that you see in every one of the articles about this, whether it's the New York Times or whether it's Washington Post, they quote a Dr. Stephen Black, who is an emeritus professor of pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. This is a guy with big hospital systems, the big university systems, that type of thing. So Dr. Black says, what worries me most is that it reinforces the lack of confidence that people had in the vaccines. Since when did this become the defining characteristic for doctors? Well, our first consideration is no longer first do no harm. No, the first consideration is we don't want the trust of people in the pharmaceutical industry to be undermined, especially these vaccines. Don't tell people about negative things because it's going to undermine their misplaced blind faith in the miracle drugs of Big Pharma. And as Zero Hedge pointed out, this isn't the first side effect for the Johnson & Johnson jab, the rare blood clots and so forth, and which are four dozen people in four different states, four different sites, having severe adverse reactions right at the very beginning. Nothing to see there. All right, we'll stop it, and we'll do a quick study of six people that we say were the only people who were affected by these blood clot disorders. That was an absolute lie. Their database contradicted that, but they said, well, we looked, it's only six women out of 6 million people. And we don't see that's a problem at all. So start it up again and then go door to door pushing this stuff. The FDA issued the warning. They said after 100 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Oh, wow. When we look at this, just to point out, as childrenshealthdefense.org is saying, the CDC says that kids can get COVID and flu shots now at the same time. No problem. Just like we had to have, the CDC had to have all of the retail locations and all of the local public health offices that were going to be vaccinating people, all the pop-up clinics and everything, they had a long, detailed form of all the information that was supposed to be collected, personal information about you, and transmitted right away to the CDC. As well as if you went to see a attending physician or went to a hospital, they would offer you the COVID vaccine. And if you said no, they were supposed to give all your personal information to the CDC as well. But of course, they don't have a database or anything like that, right? And so now what they're saying is that, the justification for that, of course, was that we don't want to mix these vaccines up. And now they're saying, sure. Yeah. Take one of Pfizer, take one of Moderna, and call me in the morning. And now they're saying you can mix them together with the flu vaccines. The Children's Health Defense Fund says, but where is the safety study? There is no safety study. As a matter of fact, they're experimenting on children. Experimenting on children. The kids, the kid cove thing that I mentioned. Age de-escalation. Make it for the very young. Dose escalation. We're going to increase the dosage. We're going to drop the age of the kids down to 6 months. We're going to increase the dosage and see what happens. This is Nazi science. This is what Mengele did to people. Let's see what happens if I inject this into kids. Give me some twins, okay? That's what they need. And the parents, just like the drag queen story time, they're bringing their kids into these clinics. Total lack of discernment. As I point out in the Children's Health Defense Fund, when you look at the flu vaccines and you talk about how much damage prior to the COVID vaccine, it was the flu vaccines that did the most damage. And these are the ones that you had exactly the same sales techniques done on an annual basis by Fauci and the CDC. Oh, look at how many people we got. All these cases of flu. Don't bother to send the swab in. Just if it's if it looks like the flu, it is the flu. Clinical diagnosis. That's what we call it. Yeah. And so they would run these things, and then they would tell everybody how many people are dying of the flu every year and go ahead and get it. But it was a crapshoot. They would decide months in advance so they could make these flu. They would decide the flu shots. They would decide months in advance which strain you were going to be subjected to. They had no idea. It's just like they know now. Well, we're going to have some very bad variants that are going to be coming around the fall. We're going to have to mandate these things for you, right? It's the same stuff they did. But the policy also calls for precautions in giving the vaccine. Even though they're going to say we're going to mix the flu vaccine with the COVID vaccine for children, the policy calls for a precaution in giving a vaccine to anybody with a moderate or severe acute illness, a history of Guillain-Barré syndrome, within 6 weeks of receiving an influenza vaccine. So there we go. This is coming out even before they tied in the Johnson & Johnson to Guillain-Barré syndrome. They were even saying, we've got to watch out for this. People have had a history of Guillain-Barré. Watch out. So now, but don't worry, we can just get you the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We can mix a little bit of flu vaccine in there. Roll up your sleeve. It actually increases the risk of flu. Historically, we've seen that. People who get it, it takes down their immune system. They're more vulnerable to it. As Children's Health Defense Fund also points out, the VAERS is there to protect the vaccine makers and not the kids. You understand that, right? It was put in there at the same time that they gave them legal immunity. They were supposed to keep records and make annual reports to Congress. They never did that. We had RFK Jr. and Del Bigtree put together a FOIA request saying, give us the information. We'd like to see the reports that you put together for the last 30 years of this stuff. They said, no, we're not going to show you that. Typical response from a U.S. government agency. And so they said, all right, we'll have to sue you, which is typically what people have to do. They typically have to sue to get them to relinquish the information. They said, yeah, you got to give it up to them. And when they did, they said, well, we don't have any. We didn't keep any information. We were told that we had to keep information about this. You know, that was part of the deal. They get legal immunity, says Fauci. Well, we'll give them legal immunity. We'll keep a database here, keeping track of how many people got it. And then we'll put together some recommendations and guidelines on how they can make these things safer, right? Well, it turns out that they didn't do any of that stuff for 30-some-odd years. They interviewed on childrenshealthdefense.org a vaccine safety advocate, Eileen Iorio, and Wayne Rode, author of The Vaccine Court, talk about the failure of the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, including why the system captures fewer than 1% of the vaccine injuries, as reported by government officials, the former head of the HHS and others. What the VAERS really does, they said, the people who wrote the book, The Vaccine Court, is to exonerate vaccine makers from civil liability, and it was designed to submit these biannual reports to Congress, which they never did. But they said doctors are taught in medical school that vaccine injuries are mythology. They're also disincentivized from reporting too many of them. And so doctors who do report them are punished by their professional societies. That's one of the reasons why you have this guy who's head of the hospital association says, oh, I'm worried about this. This could really undermine trust. We're not supposed to talk about people who are harmed by vaccines. And if you do talk about people who are harmed by vaccines, then there's going to be professional recriminations taken against you. You might actually get fired from the hospital, just like you get fired from the hospital if you give people safe and effective drugs that have been used for 50, 60, 70 years. As Joel Hirshhorn was telling us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, welcome back. We have a screenshot of a newspaper in Australia called the Herald Sun. I'll just show you what this looks like. You won't believe this. Herald Sun, a call to arms. The pandemic is beating Australia. Lockdowns and fear. Not vaccines and hope are winning. We are fed up with the petty politics, the finger-pointing, and the division. This is a war against a deadly, invisible enemy. That's right. You can't see the pandemic unless you watch television. It's a strange enemy. It's so invisible. You can't see it out amongst your friends and families or the community at large. No, no. You can only see it if you watch the news. Because we've only had a few dozen people allegedly died from this in Australia, but they've locked down the entire country. We will not win it unless we get serious and on the same page. No more promises. It is time to get the jab done. A call for arms. Today, the Herald Sun joins with other News Corp newspapers to launch a campaign to get our country back on the road to freedom. And what is News Corp? Oh, that's right. That is the Murdoch family coming out of Australia. Same people behind Fox News. Same people who are heavily funded by the pharmaceutical industry. The government needs to get on a war footing to secure more doses. And today, the country's top doctors and scientists unite to urge Australians to get the jab, arguing that COVID-19 is more insidious than the rare side effects of our vaccine. Oh, so they're admitting that it's got side effects. Well, but they're rare. But it is a war. And guess who the enemy is? Those of you who are not getting the vaccine. You are the extremists. You are the domestic terrorists. Politico had a couple of very interesting articles that got a lot of press attention yesterday afternoon. First one, few options for Biden as vaccination pace hits a wall. Well, you know, he's got to do something to please his globalist masters and to please the media that is heavily financed by the big pharmaceutical companies. So what is Biden going to do? What are his options? How is he going to push forward Trump's vaccines? Since April, the gap in vaccination rates between counties that voted for Biden and those who went for former President Donald Trump grew by 5 times, says Politico, and the Biden administration is running out of ideas. Let's see. I guess the only thing that we can do is vaccinate people at the point of a bayonet, right? The federal immunization campaign has slammed into rising partisanship and deep resistance among the 91 million adults who remain unvaccinated. Well, actually, you know, that's not true. We have an article that debunks that whole thing, which kind of helps to explain to me and there is a great deal of doublethink with Trump supporters. I mean, you've had reporters for CNN go out into small towns and talk to people who are Trump supporters, say, aren't you going to get the, oh, I'm not taking that thing. But President Trump did it, don't you? Yeah, he made a big mistake doing that. But yeah, I really want him back in the White House. He's got to save us. And you heard him, you know, he was applauded. So was the person who said, they're not going to get us vaccinated. We're not going to fall for this. And that freaked out Fauci. As I played the clip for you yesterday, he said, that was horrifying to see these people applauding, saying they're never going to get my vaccine here. And then those people went 70% for President Trump. But let me tell you what they're really up against here. As I said, you know, whenever I like to go to YouTube and take a look at what they're pushing people in terms of propaganda. You know, it's not just News Corp and Fox News people who are getting massively financed to push this, not only by the big pharmaceutical companies, but also by the Ad Council. They've released a lot of money out there for people who will push this stuff, and I'm sure a lot of that money is going to YouTube as well. And so you'll see videos like this one. Here's the title of this video. Doctors warn people are taking a risk by skipping the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, there was really nothing of any interest, nothing new in this vaccine. But what was interesting, and I want to read you some of the comments, and I'm telling you, there were thousands of comments on this video. I think hundreds or thousands. It's a tremendous number of comments. I couldn't go through all of them. And I went page after page after page of these comments. Not a single comment was buying any of this stuff. I mean, YouTube is pushing as hard as they can. Do they really think that they're fooling people? You know, you go back to the Soviet Union under Stalin, and they had the two big news outlets were Izvestia, which means news, and Pravda, which means truth. And they would say there is no news in Izvestia and there is no truth in Pravda. The people who had lived under a controlled press and under propaganda had never had a free press whatsoever. Those people were not fooled by the propaganda coming out of Izvestia and Pravda. They mocked it. Do they really think that they're fooling Americans, no matter how much money they, how many hundreds of millions of dollars they pour into the Ad Council, or billions of dollars that they pour into the pharmaceutical companies and then in these ads for Fox News and CNN? Here are some of the comments. It's like that one South Park bit. Stan, I have SARS. I only have a 98% chance to live. The most shocking thing about this video is that they think people are actually going to want to visit San Francisco this summer because it was focused in San Francisco. No, thanks. A risk? You mean like a 0.001% risk? Didn't make me sick the first time? Won't make me sick the second. When they remove legal immunity for the vaccine companies, then maybe I'll consider it. And then this one. The title of this video, Doctors Warn People Are Taking a Risk by Skipping COVID-19 Vaccine, is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Another one. Give it up. The people who haven't taken the vaccine by now aren't planning to take it. LOL, their mind is made up. Everything is a risk, says another. Some people aren't willing to take an unknown risk and would rather take a known risk, especially when the known risk is 99.7% positive that nothing is going to happen. The only thing you risk by not getting the government experimental gene therapy injection is looking much smarter than everybody else who did. COVID isn't gone, says another one. Well, yeah, it'll never be gone, they said. My safety is a big concern for me, so incentive to invest in something made for global safety rather than individual safety? Not appealing. And again, this person gets it. There is no such thing as public health. There is no such thing as herd immunity. There is, you either got individual immunity, which they're saying, well, vaccines don't give you individual immunity. Well, then hang it up. Forget it. There's no logical argument for us to proceed any further than that. But there is no such thing as herd immunity, or if you don't have individual immunity. There is no such thing as public health if you ignore the health of the individuals. And people are taking a risk, taking a vaccine that has no long-term studies on it. Life is a risk. Everything you do has risk attached. Another person says, yeah, such a big risk. Did y'all forget about all the people still testing positive for it after being vaccinated? 9 cases of coronavirus at the Capitol, 4 involving unvaccinated people, quoting from the little puff piece here. So vaccinated people have almost the same risk of getting coronavirus as the unvaccinated? Next comment. Warms my heart to finally see people waking up to the government and the media's BS. Another one. Also, something far deadlier is among you than that being fast food, soda, alcohol, all sorts of tobacco alternatives. If they pushed agendas on these half as hard as they did, the Rona, Americans' obesity issues, would be cut in half in a year. Another one says, okay, cool. Now do a video for the risks of taking it. Another one, if you took blank and you developed blank, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Does that sound familiar? Well, yes, it does, except you're not going to be hearing those commercials for the vaccines because they're Fauci, legal immunity. Guys, haven't you heard? You can get a free donut or a burger with fries with your vaccine. And then I'll give you just this one more because I've got pages of these things. I could go on all day. I just kept going. Not a single person was buying this nonsense. This one. The Louisiana governor literally said that to prepare for a hurricane, the first thing you should do is get the COVID vaccine. What? That's how crazy this stuff is. The people are laughing at YouTube. They're laughing at CNN and at Fox if they push this out there. So Politico says We're under no illusions that each person at this stage will take longer to reach. Maybe they've been reading the comments on YouTube videos, propaganda videos as well. The first 180 million people were easier than the next 5 million is going to be. That's right. Get the low-hanging fruit. And the rest of us are sitting there watching what's happening to those people who've taken the vaccine and saying, not a chance. Yet, as the pandemic recedes and officials concentrate on the holdouts, their efforts are being made increasingly difficult by, who's the new enemy? Conservative politicians and pundits. See, we are the enemy. Because you can't have any debate, discussion, any ridicule of their monolithic narrative, right? They use this term in Politico. The White House, in the meantime, is redoubling efforts to convert the unvaccinated. Do you see that? This is bold-faced religious beliefs. This is a blind faith that they are hoping that you have. But a lot of people's eyes have been opened, and I'm sorry, once your eyes are opened, you can't unsee this stuff. Though a range of prominent health experts, writes Politico, contend that the FDA could prime demand by fully approving the vaccine, that's why we talked to Joel Hirshhorn, there's skepticism within the administration that millions are holding out until the agency gives its final endorsement. And then in addition to that, you have Marcus Plessia, chief medical officer for, listen to this, did you know that this existed? It's a thing called the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. So they've got their own association to pressure and to reward people. It's all politics inside of politics inside of politics. This nasty deep state is like some kind of a Modrioski doll. And so at this level, these people say, well, what we'd like to do is to get another 10% vaccinated quickly. Maybe mandates would do that, but I don't know if that's worth it for the amount of backlash that we get. That's right, because you know what? You try to do that, and the first thing we need to do is shut down this Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, the bureaucrats, who are banding together to coerce us. So yeah, they're going to hold out prominent health experts, and it's just a matter of crossing, dotting the I and crossing the T. But you know what else they've crossed? They're crossing the Rubicon. They're going to cross that Rubicon pretty soon in terms of mandates, one way or the other. And I think it's going to be the fall. Again, we're seeing that multiple indications. I have seen that since last fall. Schools are trusted places, so we need to use them to push it. We need to use pastors to do this. And, you know, they make the point, as Politico pushed back against all the pushback that they got in terms of talking about going door to door. So Politico did this article yesterday, had a very key thing in it. Part of what they had to say was Fauci saying, you know, these people are not bureaucrats. They're trusted community members, right? We're getting pastors to do some of this stuff. See how they're using that? Potentially a death sentence, he says. You know, White House goes off on the vaccine fearmongers. Wait a minute. We're the fearmongers? For the last 486 days, you've been telling us that we're all going to die if we step outside. We're all going to die if we don't wear a Fauci rag on our face. You've been pumping us full of nonsense, contradicting yourself on a regular basis. And we're the fear mongers. You have pushed fear like nobody has ever pushed fear before. And you've shut down anybody who said there's nothing to fear. I've been saying there's nothing to fear from this thing for the last 468 days and or 86 days. And now you're calling me a fear monger? Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. The Biden administration is casting conservative opponents of the vaccine campaign as dangerous and extreme. Where do we hear that? Oh, that's right. The January 6th people, the people who showed up to exercise their First Amendment, the right to redress their grievances, peacefully assemble. They highlighted a very small minority of a small minority of a small minority of people who got violent. And now they're coming after everybody. And now they're setting up agencies to come after domestic extremists who are also domestic terrorists. So I guess that if I'm a conservative opponent and a dangerous pundit, that I can expect to be treated and considered as a terrorist as well, right? The pushback will include directly calling out social media platforms and conservative news shows that promote such tactics. And what they're really going to focus on is Tucker Carlson. The big misinterpretation that Fox News or whoever else is saying this is that they're essentially envisioning a bunch of federal workers knocking on your door, telling you you got to do something you don't want to do. Fauci says, that's not true. That's absolutely not the case. It's trusted messengers who are part of the community doing that. It's not government officials. So that's where I think the disconnect is. Yeah, cynical liars. Trust me, I'm from the government. I'm from the government even though I am a pastor or a community organizer or whatever the particular title is there. So they said that and this is the thing that got a lot of press report yesterday. Biden's allied groups, including the DNC, Democrat National Committee, were also planning to engage fact checkers more aggressively, and to meaning censors. They're not fact checkers, they're censors. And to work with SMS carriers to dispel misinformation about vaccines that is sent over social media and text messages. Oh, so they're going to start looking at our text messages? That's the question, right? And we'll give you the update to that. But they said, we're steadfastly committed to keeping politics out of the effort to get every American vaccinated. As they say that. So he turns to the DNC, and the DNC says, well, we've got to find ways that we can censor text messages and that we can censor social media. It's like, oh, are they going to be looking at our text messages then, like they're looking at social media? How does that work out? Well, what they're saying is that... as you look at the Daily Caller, they said the DNC wants the phone companies to police text messages. This is in response to Charlie Kirk with Turning Point USA, and that he sent out a text messaging campaign. So he's broadcasting a text message out, saying that Biden is sending goons door to door to make you take a COVID-19 vaccine. Sign the petition here. No medical raids in America. And give us your information so we can hit you constantly for fundraising. That's basically what that was about. So what they're doing is they're not necessarily going to be monitoring the text messages between you and your friends or your wife or whatever. They're going to be monitoring these SMS broadcast text messages. But still, that is something new. And it is very political. And it is also political what Charlie Kirk is doing. I'm glad that he's doing it, finally. He wouldn't do anything to push back against this lockdown globalist agenda while Trump was in office. You see these Republican operatives, now that there's been a sufficient amount of time from Trump being in office that he could be held accountable for any of this by them, they are now coming out to oppose it. And I said that was going to happen. All these people say, it's going to be a catastrophe if Trump doesn't win. I said, if Trump doesn't win, at least we're going to know who the enemy is. You don't even know who your enemy is at this point. I said, when Trump doesn't win, because it was a given that he was not going to win because he allowed them to do a lockdown mail-in election. He played along with a lockdown, and what he got in response was a corrupt mail-in election. So I said, he's going to lose. And when he does lose, then you're going to have some of the Republicans who have set on their hands silently, like Rand Paul, people like Charlie Kirk, who are going to finally oppose it. Why? Because there's some political capital to be made by opposing it. There's a vast number of people out there who don't like what's happening. They've been pacified by these Republicans. They say it's 4D chess, right? You've heard that somewhere. It's 4D chess. He knows what he's doing. They say that, again, they want to... this is all about these political operatives, and as soon as they say the DNC wants to look and stop text messages, they then immediately, Politico says, we're steadfastly committed to keeping politics out of the effort to get every American vaccinated. Oh, really? They're using it for politics every bit as much as Charlie Kirk is using it for politics. Of course, when we see deliberate efforts to spread misinformation, we view it as an impediment to the country's public health, and we will not shy away from stopping that. Well, you know what? Neither will I. And I don't have to win. I don't have to silence my opponents in this debate to win this debate. They can only win this debate if they shut everybody else down. And as I showed you from these YouTube comments, even then, they can't win this because people can see through the BS. They said of the least vaccinated states, the 10 least vaccinated states, all were won by Donald Trump. So there you go. Let the demonization begin. You know that they're coming after us if they tie us to Trump. Because he's not standing between us and them. He is the lightning rod of demonization for people. The Delta variant is coming. We got to have pastors and grassroots organizers out there knocking on doors, not government bureaucrats, they said. So Charlie Kirk said we've got to stop this apartheid-style open-air hostage situation. Wait a minute. For 486 days I've been saying that. I've called it apartheid. I've called it a massive prison system. It's a lockdown. The term lockdown was first used in prisons. Then it was used in government schools. Now it's been applied to society in general. And I said that when they started using it in government schools, I said they're training kids to live in a prison society. And that's what these kids that were trained with lockdowns 20 years ago, you know, they say, oh, somebody with a gun, lockdown, lockdown, or a threat or whatever, we're going to lock you down, and drilling for lockdowns all the time. Well, now those kids have grown up and they're ready to be locked down. They've been trained from an early age for lockdown, for life in a prison society. I've called this an open-air prison situation. I've called it hostage taking. I've talked about it being the Stockholm Syndrome. Well, now it's safe for Charlie Kirk to say that. And listen to this dig that Politico puts in. They said, well, Turning Point's other co-founder, Bill Montgomery, he died last year from coronavirus-related complications. Bill Montgomery was 80 years old. And to say that he died from coronavirus-related complications, that means that he didn't die from coronavirus. That meant he died probably from financially incentivized medical malpractice around all of this stuff. Let me give you an example. Let's take somebody else. The guy who wasn't a co-founder of Turning Point USA. Let's take the guy who was a co-founder of America, George Washington. Now, George Washington died within 21 hours of getting a throat infection. He got the throat infection when he decided that he would ride his horse around his property during a survey of it during some very cold weather. It comes back. He wasn't 80 years old. He was 67 years old. He came back and he had a sore throat. And it was a very bad sore throat. It did not respond to some of the natural, you know, immune things that they would give him, like honey and some other things like that. So they called in some physicians. And before he died, 21 hours after he contracted the sore throat, they had drained from him 3.75 pints of blood, 80% of his blood, these doctors had drained from him. They had also applied beetles to his legs to make blisters that, for whatever purpose, they thought that was going to be. Since he had a sore throat, they did some things to his neck that severely burned his neck. And then they gave him calomel, which is a mercury compound. So they give him mercury, they put beetles on his legs, they burn his throat on the outside, and then they drain him of 80% of his blood. I guess he died from COVID complications, do you think? I mean, it sounds to me like he had COVID. I think we should add him to Fauci's tally, just like they added Bill Montgomery to the tally. What we're looking here at is medical malpractice. It's very easy to see it from a distance, but we don't see it when it's happening right among us, do we? George Washington said before he died, he said, "I die hard." Yeah, he sure did. Drained all of his blood, gave him mercury, put beetles on his leg, burned his throat. "I die hard, but I am not afraid to go." Unlike the people who are afraid to get COVID and will do anything to avoid it. And so, yeah, for 486 days, we've had an apartheid-style open-air hostage situation. I'm glad that he finally realizes it because I was talking about it 60 days to 90 days before that. Saying, you know what they're going to do? They're going to put you in an open-air style hostage situation. It's going to be a prison. We can see what's happening in China. I know what their plan has been. They've been planning for this for 20 years. So that is the bottom line. And pushing back against this, one more quote here from the Politico article. They have a George W. Bush alumni, John Bridgeland. And he's teamed up with the Biden administration, surprise, surprise. They have created something called the COVID Collaborative. Yeah, there's a lot of collaboration going on with this COVID thing, isn't it? Republicans and Democrats collaborating, Trump collaborating with the globalists, producing the vaccines that everybody's using globally. Bridgeland said his group had already seen a shift on the ground of people shutting doors in their faces because they don't want to get vaccinated. See, he's part of this. Let's push people out. Go door to door. I'll help you do that, says the George W. Bush alumni. And he says, we are creating sex of the country where the virus just bounces around among the unvaccinated. That sounds very scientific, doesn't it? It sounds like this guy is a real scientist. I can tell. John Bridgeland. They don't say that he's got any credentials other than having been a political hack for George W. Bush. But, of course, that's what this is about. This is a pandemic being run by, brought to you by, propagated by, kept going endlessly by a bunch of political hacks. He says it's completely illogical. It's potentially a death sentence, he said. He is unvaccinated. They're just bouncing the virus amongst themselves, right? I haven't been a sick throughout this entire thing. Never wore Fauci. And I've got, I check off all the things that they say is supposed to be at risk. Age, other health issues. Now, it's being coordinated by people who have platforms and who have an interest in bringing down the current administration. Well, that part of it is true. They do have an interest in bringing down the Biden platform. But that doesn't mean that they're not finally telling you the truth. See, what Charlie Kirk is doing is he's telling you the truth. He may be doing it in order to bring down the Biden administration. In the same way that he wouldn't tell you the truth for the last 500 days because he didn't want to bring down the Trump administration. But he is finally telling you the truth. And you need to evaluate the truth regardless of who it hurts or who it helps politically. You get to that point and that's when we made a turning point, America, to paraphrase Charlie Kirk's organization. At that point, America will have made a turning point if we can honestly look at policies and actions and evaluate them apart from parties and apart from personalities. At that point, then we have made a big turning towards a kind of maturity that's going to be necessary for us to do what needs to be done. It's being coordinated by people who have platforms, who have an interest in bringing down the current administration. Exactly. Unlike Politico and the Biden administration, the DNC, they have no political agenda whatsoever, obviously. Now, all of this is being characterized by the New York Post, by the Washington Post, by Politico, by the Biden administration, by the DNC, as being something that is put together simply it's the Republican men who voted for Trump who don't want to get the vaccine. There's a good article that's up on Zero Hedge by Emily Miller. She has the Emily Post News. This is the title of the article. Mainstream media is wrong. Vaccine hesitancy is not highest among Republican men, and Trump isn't to blame. Now, her motivation may be to exonerate Trump. But the bottom line is, regardless, her analysis is correct. She points out that the CDC recently reported, quote, vaccination coverage and intent among adults is lowest among those 18 to 39 years old. Why would that be? Well, that would be because they don't have a risk, even according to what the CDC has been saying all year. You know that the people who are 18 to 39, they've been voracious, everybody's been voracious consumers of the news for the last year. And so they're looking at this very closely. What's the risk for people in my age group? Oh, okay, well, I'm fine. Nobody's dying in my age group. They knew that already. She goes on to say the CDC doesn't even mention political affiliation as a factor. Among the 18 to 39-year-olds, the rates were lowest for those who were younger, black, poorer, less educated, uninsured, and living outside metropolitan areas. And yet, this is what the Washington Post is saying. She's got a collection of headlines from the Washington Post. Listen to this. Headline, the GOP's very stubborn vaccine skepticism. Headline, a third of white conservatives refuse to get vaccinated, a refusal shown in polling and in the real world. Headline, we are in a race. GOP governors implore residents to overcome vaccine hesitancy as the Delta variant rises. And then this headline, and she says the Post didn't even did its own push poll to put this narrative out more. And this is the headline they got from their push poll. Post ABC poll. And it's not, that doesn't mean that it's after ABC. It means a Washington Post ABC poll. Biden earns high marks for handling the pandemic, but many Republicans resist vaccination. She writes, the editors at the Post don't see their own bias on the news side, but the opinion side was also determined to push this kind of false narrative. They had a couple of op-eds on this topic. Here's one by Mark Tyson. If Biden wants to convince the vaccine hesitant, then give Trump credit for the vaccines. Yeah, Trump wants it. But we're not allowed, you know, in the alternative conservative media. You know, we don't want to come after Trump because Trump equals audience. Audience equals money. So do not criticize. It's safe to criticize the vaccine, but do not criticize President Trump. You can now criticize Biden and pretend that the lockdown didn't happen under Trump, that it only happens under Biden and the masks and all the other stuff. But it was much worse under Trump than it is right now under Biden. So, you know. But anyway, then another op-ed piece by Max Boot, the CFR globalist neocon, Max Boot. He said this, Republicans are preventing America from reaching Biden's vaccination goal. Oh, well, who cares? How the media works, she says, number one, the outlet will cite a public opinion poll, but ignore CDC statistics. They don't want to use CDC statistics for this. They don't want to talk about the CDC statistics in the VAERS database either. Isn't it interesting? They manipulate the numbers, right? And then the manipulation extends to which numbers they're going to talk to you about. Oh, we ain't going to talk to you about that database. Oh, that doesn't exist. Some of this stuff is amazing how they try to cherry pick even from their own manipulated numbers. So they'll cite a public opinion poll instead of CDC statistics. Number two, the reporter will get quotes from a random expert who says that the poll proves the GOP is the problem with ending the pandemic. And then number three, the journalist will find a twist to blame all of this on Donald Trump. Or if it's a conservative journalist, they'll find a twist to make sure that it isn't blamed on Donald Trump. It's all blamed on Biden. See, that's how this works. She said, look at what the Voice of America is putting out all over the world. Quote, unvaccinated Americans are whiter and more Republican than the vaccinated. And I've mentioned this from the very beginning. I said, you know, they've got a big problem with the black community because the black community has really, they've lost the trust of the black community with things like, you know, the Tuskegee experiment. Now, that's a big red flag right there. Or, you know, the CIA's crack cocaine epidemic that they did against the black community there in L.A. in order to fund their dirty wars in Central and South America. Jen Psaki announces that Biden will support local vaccine mandates. Well, of course he will. He wants to mandate everything. The Model State Health Emergency Powers Act. You had, of course, yesterday, Fauci saying that he believes at the local level there ought to be more mandates. Let me just replay that for you as he's talking to fake Jake Tapper.
Isn't mandating vaccines, but do you think it's generally a good idea for businesses or schools to require vaccinations?
Right. I have been of this opinion, and I remain of that opinion, that I do believe at the local level, Jake, there should be more mandates. There really should be. We're talking about life and death situation. We've lost 600,000 Americans already, and we're still losing more people. There have been 4 million deaths worldwide. This is serious business. So I am in favor of that. You know, one of the things that will happen.
Yeah. Well, let me make you an offer you can't refuse, right? And the way that offer is going to work out is you're going to have Biden come in and say, well, you know, I don't really want to mandate things. And you've had Javier Becerra, who is his secretary, head of Health and Human Services. He said, we want to give people a sense that they have the freedom to choose. And we hope they choose to live, right? We want to give you a sense that you have freedom. the freedom to choose. We're going to say things like, hey, you know, I believe in free choice, like Biden said. So you can either, here's the choice. It's really simple. It's your choice. You're free to choose whatever you want. You can either get the vaccine or wear a mask until you do. You can either get the vaccine or never travel again. You can get the vaccine or you won't go to school or have a job. Yeah, but it's a choice. You know, it's like you got the choice. You either bow down and worship me or cut your head off. How about that? I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. That's the way these guys operate. It is a mafia. It's a globalist mafia. It's a drug. It's a numbers game. It's a bunch of. It's a dirty drug game. It is a war of drugs on the American people. 40% of Brits want a mask mandate in place forever, reports lockdown skeptics. And they want the unvaccinated permanently banned from foreign travel. There you go. It's the offer you can't refuse right there. New polling by Ipsos Mori for The Economist in the UK suggests that a high percentage of Brits believe the number of lockdown restrictions should stay in place permanently, including nighttime curfews. 19% of them want permanent nighttime curfews. 35% of them want travel quarantine. And a whopping 40% want face masks forever. Forever. Well over 40% of Brits also believe that only those who have been vaccinated against COVID and are able to prove it should be allowed to travel abroad again permanently. Tucker Carlson, again, he's going to be the point man that they come after. He says this is vindictive and it's scary and it's coming despite a waning pandemic. And we all see that that is happening here. He says, and citing that interview where Javier Becerra says, we want to give a people a sense that they have a freedom to choose. He said, well, the Biden administration is no longer pro-choice. And they never were. The only choice they want you to make is a choice to kill your child. You have no choice as to whether or not you're going to vaccinate your child with MMR, with the COVID vaccine, or with anything else. You have no choice about whether or not how you're going to educate your child. You have no choice about anything except whether or not to kill your child. We will help you with that. In France, to give you an idea where this is headed, you have Emmanuel Macron, again, a globalist, just like Trump and Justin Trudeau and the conservative premier and Jason Kenney, who is locking up churches and locking up pastors, right? Doesn't matter. They can be liberal, conservative. They can be, you know, American, French, Canadian, whatever. French-Canadian. But to board a train or to visit restaurants or to go to theaters or to go to bars or to go to cinemas from August on, all French people over the age of 12 years old will need to get a pass. A pass. Called a passport. You know, you had the Harvard guy who had a problem with that. Well, I don't like the idea of this vaccine passport. And, of course, they don't like that because people immediately understand what that is. That's a very negative thing, right? And the way the left has always manipulated us and won the debate is by choosing the terms. And so this Harvard guy, public health bureaucrat, didn't like the idea that we called it a vaccine passport. Well, we can't do that. We've got to come up with something else, right? Well, it perfectly applies. It's permission. A pass, a hall pass, a passport to live your life by these people. This is what Macron says. We will extend the health pass as much as possible to push as many of you English types to get vaccinated. That's right, because a sense of choice is just an illusion. So they're going to push you to make that choice. And they're going to keep pushing. And the pushing is going to get harder. Like you heard the pro-choice CEO of Planned Parenthood, former CEO of Planned Parenthood, Leanna Wen, say, we got to make it easier for the vaccinated and harder for the unvaccinated, right? It will not be mandatory, he said, in the future to get vaccinated. However, if inoculation rates do not pick up, Macron warned, quote, he will ask the question of compulsory vaccination for all people. So we'll see. You know, we want to give you the illusion of choice, and we're going to make it as difficult, as hard for you and your life as possible. We're going to keep you apartheid. We're going to keep you locked out of society. And if that doesn't break you, then we'll force inject you. That's coming. And then this, right? For the time being, you can get your pass. If you don't want to get the vaccine, you have to take tests, and you have to take tests again and again and again and again. You stick that thing up your nose, and you have to keep doing that, right? And they said, well, beginning in from autumn on, so in August, they're going to make you either get recent tests, constantly being tested, or you get vaccinated, or you're going to have your life shut down. And then as of autumn, what they're going to do is to get the health pass. You can still get the COVID test, but guess what? You're going to now have to pay for it. And you know how expensive these things can be because this is a medical thing. They're going to jack the price sky high on this thing. So that's going to be the next thing they do. First, they're going to punish you by sticking the swab up your nose. And then if you can tolerate that to live your life, then they're going to start hitting you with big fees. And then if that doesn't do it, then we're just going to force inject you. That's what these people have in mind. That's where we are. So that's why it's very important for us to understand what the basis of this is. And I'll just say this again. We don't fight this war with the weapons that the secular world does. We have something that is mighty, that is far more powerful. This can take down the principalities and the powers that are above this and behind this that you don't see. And that's what we as Christians need to be galvanized to understand, that we don't have to fight this with political parties. We don't even have to fight this with AR-15s. We got something far more powerful. Christ is on the throne. And we have prayer, and we have other things at our disposal. And so that is really the task before us. It is one of reformation in this country, and reformation begins in our personal lives. Thanks for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.